Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast on film and television. And on this episode, we're discussing weird or intriguing character choices. Won't You Be My Neighbor? And if Mr. Rogers could even exist today? And then at the very end of the show, we're going to have our Ant-Man and the Wasp reactions and spoiler cast, plus a lot more. Now, let's see what all the buzz is about. Yeah, that just happened. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, I'm my fellow host, Johnny Davenport.
Hi, Aaron. Did you enjoy the birth of your nation?
Yes, it was great. I celebrated. Go America. Yay.
Yay.
Yay. So much to celebrate these days. Angela Wallach is joining us this week.
Hey, fellas.
You just had a celebration of your birth, right? Just recently?
I did. I did celebrate my birth. I am older.
Are you as old as the country?
Yes, I feel like it sometimes.
Aw, that's so sad.
But hopefully wiser?
Yeah, we all hope that.
Yeah.
I don't.
Mm-mm. John, you don't act it, don't look it, don't smell it, nothing.
Mm-mm.
Well, Angela, I want to mention you were on a recent episode of Remake's Movie Right, right? Highlander, there can be only one. What?
There can be only one, or there can be a remake.
or
15 sequels.
There's Disney, you can have as many as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep making them. Speaking of Disney, I got to mention this real quick because I'm a little sad. Not only in the last couple weeks did I find out Miles Teller is going to be in Top Gun 2, which I don't want to, I'm still crying. But I also just found out that Indiana Jones and the Pursuit of Senility, or Indiana Jones 5, has been delayed to July 9th, 2021. Harrison Ford is going to be 78 when that movie comes out.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I don't think it's happening.
No, that's just happened today.
78.
Jeez. No, I don't think he's going to make it. He's going to crash a plane or something by then.
Dude, no, he will be fine. Harrison Ford is going to live forever. Han Solo, right. On the other hand, not so much.
Is Harrison Ford like the Highlander?
He might be.
He wants to live forever.
I don't think so, because literally he takes a step and breaks his leg. So I don't think he's doing so. What is he going to do in the movie? I mean, I know they have stuntmen and whatnot, but at that point, just put him in a chair and have somebody guide him to a treasure.
Well, they're just going to CGI his face onto a stuntman.
Right. He never looked like he could run to begin with. Even in the 90s, it was like, okay, Harrison, run. And it was the most awkward looking thing ever.
I just put him on a hill. we hope gravity will take over. Yay.
That's what it looks like when he runs. It's like he just throws himself in a general direction. And I hope this is the right way.
All right, well, let's get into the real movie and TV discussion before we get into our topic, which is confusing, but we understand, and that's what matters. You'll understand when we get there. So we just had a Heather's TV show. Jack Ryan begins his TV run August 31st on Amazon. The Purge series begins September 4th on USA, and now there is talk of an Alien TV series in the works because, hey, when the movies don't work, why not? So since there is already so much TV to choose from, does it help to have properties we know to choose from, or do we just need to pump the brakes altogether?
Speaking from my own experience, I kind of want to be able to say people need to just pump the brakes on these TV shows because I'm getting to the point where there's so many options. I just want to read a book instead. But I kind of get it. You know, we've had so many discussions with people in the industry who say that people identify with something, they're going to in mass kind of go to that thing they identify with. So I get why they're doing this. What about you, Angela?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's a little bit of both, because besides the ones you just mentioned, Aaron, you think about all the just like the reboots that are coming back, you know, with Roseanne, Will and Grace. I've heard Mad About You is coming back. So they're actually just bringing back even old shows, not actually even spinning them off. So I think I would personally prefer new and original stuff, but at the same time, I guess if you're bringing back something or you're spinning off something that's already existing, as long as they do it well or they bring something new to it, I can get behind it. But with the plethora of stuff that's out there, I mean, instinctually, I would rather see something different.
As long as nobody tweets anyway.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I think is cool about this idea is, so what they're talking about doing is something where they follow a deal with a colony and the colonial marines on a colony. So I don't even remember if they're actually called colonial marines, but whatever, it sounds cool. So I think the idea of following that, plus the idea of they're saying that it might be something along the lines of they're going to expand off of Prometheus and off of Alien Covenant, where you have different kind of aliens, not exactly these xenomorph in quotation marks, but different kind of aliens to play with, and it's going to be more of an expanding universe kind of idea. I think I can get behind that if it's character based, if it uses effects of the 90s, I think it can work.
No, you said Alien Covenant and everything after that, all I heard was bleh. So
all you saw was red and yes, rage and festering.
I felt like something just burst out of my chest. Somebody
dumping garbage out of a garbage can.
Oh, ugh. I don't want that. Whatever that was, get it out.
Whatever that noise was, you need to turn that into a soundbite.
The one thing I will say, and I totally, when they first announced all this and I'm looking at all of them, I'm like, my God, there's a lot of them. I didn't even realize how many there were. Of course, my initial reaction was, we don't need them. You know, we've got too many. Da, 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 da. I sat and pondered it for a little bit. When you've got 500 scripted shows over the course of this year, there are actually going to be 500 scripted shows on streaming and cable and everything. To me, I get completely why they would want to do that, because at some point you have such an oversaturation, you need something that already has a built-in hook to get people mm-hmm. to check it out. So
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
As much as I'm sitting here, well, I'm definitely not going to watch Alien if it's anything like Alien Covenant. Yeah, I said it. That movie can just go find a fiery hell and burn in it. But I definitely want it easier for me to find stuff that I want to watch. And if there are people who appreciate Alien Covenant, sad as they may be in their everyday life, I really want them to make it easier to find the shows that they want to watch. So that kind of name brand recognition makes sense to me. And I'm sorry if you took offense, but really, go watch that movie again. You'll understand. We'll wait.
Hey, how about Magnum P.I.?
I'll watch the hell out of that. I will.
Yeah.
It looks so happy and fun and Hawaii 50. So
when is that supposed to premiere? Is it this up in the
yeah, this fall? This fall.
Okay.
So good. But that was never a movie, so that doesn't really, that's more of a reboot.
Well, yeah, I'm just going back to the idea of we're seeing a lot of old stuff come back up, and that's why I was like, hey, how about that? It's just
it gets you, right?
I'm interested. Either show is, I'll probably give them three episodes. My 3-episode rule.
And CBS is making bank off these. They got like Magnum, Hawaii 50, MacGyver. What else? I mean, CSI. They're probably going to bring that back in a week or two. So I mean, they're just constantly just recranking their with a new cast over and over and over. Smart.
Yeah, I am looking forward to, somebody posted this actually in the Facebook group, that supposedly a League of Their Own TV series is in the works again. So I personally probably would watch that one, even though I'm like, I only want new stuff. I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Is Tom Hanks going to be part of it? Will he do like a narration or something? Because I would
watch that. That would it would be the most popular. It would win every award
mm-hmm.
that a TV show can win just by him narrating the opening. They can just like replay him saying the same thing. There's no crying in baseball. And then Tom Hanks would win every award.
Hey, is there like a point in an actor's career where he goes from bosom buddies to 2 Oscars and he would actually go back to television to narrate? Or is there a dollar amount that it would have to hit for him to even consider it, you think? Because he seems like a good guy, but he's not stupid.
Well, hasn't it technically already been done when he went back to HBO for Band of Brothers?
That's more prestige, and they gave him like $1 bazillion. I can't imagine that League of Their Own has got that kind of money. It doesn't have Spielberg money.
If he actually does it, good for him. That means he just doesn't care anymore.
Well, I'm just, obviously he's never been mentioned. I'm just throwing it out there. Like, what would it take for an actor his caliber to do narration for a TV show based on a movie he did years ago?
I think 10 years ago, we wouldn't even ponder like that he would potentially come back. But now in the last like 5-10 years, we've seen so many movie actors go to TV that mm-hmm. I don't think it's like outside of the realm of possibility.
No more stigma.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like Rosario Dawson just got a new TV show.
Did she really?
Yeah, it's a new show on USA about a forensic FBI agent and her sister who gets blown up and stuff. It's sounds interesting, but it's on USA Network and it's called Briar Patch.
Feels like you just spoiled the whole thing for me, by the way.
Well, that's the description of it.
All right. Well, speaking of celebrities, let's move on to Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Why do you care about Jeffrey Dean Morgan? I'll tell you why. He plays Negan on Walking Dead. But he recently had to publicly say, this is a quote he sent out to his followers or whatever. Dear people that think it's a solid plan to come to our house, take pictures, drive up to the house, knock on the door. It's not a good plan. It's rude and creepy. Respect our privacy, please. And you're being recorded. Hey, don't do that. It sounds awful, but it's also kind of funny. So where do you stand on the line between fan and star, Angela? Would you ever be one of those people we've all been to conventions and whatnot. I mean, where's the line for you to where, okay, that's probably inappropriate.
Yeah, this is a bit tricky because my first response would obviously be, don't stalk celebrities in their homes. That just doesn't seem right. It's dangerous. Nobody deserves that. But at the same time, on reflection, I totally about like 18, 20 years ago went to Los Angeles and I totally did one of those bus tours where you go around and you try to see like the Hollywood homes and you're trying Ooh. To spot celebrities. So I feel like I'm kind of guilty in doing what Jeffrey Dean Morgan's saying to an extent. Obviously, I wouldn't get out of the bus and walk up to his house and knock on his door and try to make him answer the door or anything like that. That's a bit creepy. But you know, in hindsight, I don't think it's really good. I mean, when celebs are at home with their families, they really should be left alone. I mean, outside of the fact that their families aren't in the spotlight and they don't deserve it, especially children, I don't think that it should be off limits. And it's like you said, if you want to meet them, Jeffrey Dean Morgan goes to cons all the time. You can meet him at, you know, pay your $50 and get your signature from him at a con, or try to go to a movie premiere, go to places where it's on their own terms and they're working, but going into their own house or creeping outside someone's house, that's stalkerish, not very cool. Unless we're talking about Ewan McGregor. In that case, if anyone has any details on that man, you can send them to me.
Oh my God.
I'm just being real. Ian McGregor is like the one where I would potentially stalk. But everybody else, all other celebrities, people listen to DJ Wallach are off limits.
Wow. That is something.
That took an awesome turn.
It did.
It did.
It did. I saw a single white female and it went the same way. Yeah.
Right.
What do you guys think?
I think you should probably seek help. Most likely. I don't know. I kind of wonder about the people that go up to the door or hang outside mm-hmm. the house. And what is the time frame? They're just sitting there going, you know what? It's been a little too, this is a little too long. This is where it starts being creepy. Or can you just hang out there all day hoping to catch them as they drive out of their driveway or something? Like, what's the line where I've been on the public street, not going up to their house. I've been on the public street for a little too long.
Anything beyond like 5 minutes is crazy talk to me. If there's a metric in there that has to be like, where do you start? Like if I'm giving up time in my life that could be better spent some doing something else. Yeah, that's all crazy talk. 5 minutes about the most, maybe. I'm walking by, I see a whole bunch of people holding signs. Hey, what's going on? Oh, that's so-and-so's house. All right. Right. Time to go. And I'm leaving.
So you would not be one of these people. You're saying that it's never okay, I guess.
No, in a place where they are being paid to be there. Yeah, monkey dance. You're going to dance, and I'm going to pay the money to spend some time with you and get to know you real quick. As much as I want to believe that you're going to meet me and be like, "Hey, you're John. You're totally awesome. I'm going to spend time with you." It's not going to happen. I'm not that cool. And yeah, it's just not going to happen. So I understand that. And I don't think like bothering these people on the street is a good idea. Although I've done it once, just once and only once, which was Adam Carolla, but it's Adam Carolla. So he barely counts.
Did he respond to you or?
Oh yeah. Like my thinking is if I get the opportunity, I see him on the street, and if I can do it in a way that does not either A, make me look like a moron, and B, draw attention to them, then yeah, I'll do it. Like if I can quietly be like, hey, Yeah, I just want to let you know I really appreciate what you do. Thank you so much, and have a nice day. If I could do that, if I can do that without making myself look like a moron, then that's like I did with Adam Carolla, because at the time I was watching a lot of Man Show and Dr. Drew, and he was on there, and I thought it was cool that I saw him drunk on the street someplace. He could have been a homeless guy, honestly, but I was pretty sure it was Adam Carolla, and that was cool. But at the same time, at the Sarasota Film Festival here, I was 2 feet away from Vincent D'Onofrio, and I was completely starstruck by him, and I couldn't say a single word. I kind of just like looked over my shoulder at him. Then I looked at my wife, and she's like, go say hi to him. I'm like, no, I can't. So I just won't do it.
I feel very much like John does. I definitely don't feel like Angela does, because Ewan McGregor is really how I hear it. But hey, everybody's got their thing, right? You like who you like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Didn't he just ditch his wife for a young woman? Anyway, too soon?
For Angela Wallach? Yes, he did.
Oh, you wish. You wish. I've just never understood the celebrity thing. I mean, as much as I love movies, I got to go up and touch you and be in all in your moment and everything else in a public space or a private space. If they're working, like you guys said, that's where that's for. I mean, because that's mm-hmm. what they're there for. I wouldn't even bother them if they were sitting in a Starbucks and I'm at the same Starbucks. I mean, I can probably see myself going up and congratulate, like saying, thank you for the work. It's really meant a lot to me or something like that. But I could never in a million years say, hey, can you get a picture taken with me? I just can't do it. I don't think I have that gene that's needed. Some people, I mean, they get some fantastic pictures and memories and everything else. So more power to them. I just can't do it. And I can't fathom going up to someone's house. I mean, you're to me, they're just people. They do a job I really dig, and I really respect the product that comes from both their work and a ton of other people's work. But I don't want to like hang out at their house unless they invite me, because that's just weird.
I just also feel just really bad for, again, children and families that are involved in this.
Yeah.
You know, they're not out there in the limelight. Like, they're not getting paid. This isn't what they signed up for. And so I always feel so bad when you see people who go up to the celebrities in the streets or in restaurants and stuff, and they're sitting in there with their family. It's like, leave them be.
Well, this is one of the reasons why we're losing so many stars and why we're losing so many celebrities, is because their lives are being turned completely upside down by the fact that they did a movie or they did a song or something like that. And they can't have a moment of privacy, and no one understands that they have a right to be people as well. They can go to work and do their thing and then go home and be people. But there's a subset of society that believes that because they're in the public eye for work, then they don't have any right to privacy on the road.
Yeah, that's not right. That's not right. Mm-hmm. All right, now let's move on to something cool. Just cool. Absolutely. Just smooth, badass. Not Billy Dee Williams coming to Star Trek Episode 9. Yes, that's smooth.
Star Wars.
What did I say?
Star Trek.
Same thing.
He totally did.
Same thing. Thank you for correcting me.
Who's really paying attention anymore? JJ is involved in all of it.
Well, I mean, he really, you know, he's just sitting in a meeting going, ain't nobody going to Last Jedi my ass. So get Billy Dee on the phone and get him here. I can't have mm-hmm. that. But no, we're not talking about that one. That's all cool. Love Billy Dee Williams. Should have been the last movie, but whatever. This is even cooler, I think. I don't know. A Fast and Furious spinoff that's going to star The Rock, Jason Statham, and now Idris Elba is going to be the villain. Could it get any swaggier? Is there anybody you could put in that movie to make that smoother, cooler, more badass?
All right. Aaron, I'm about to make you pregnant. You ready?
Yeah, because I could get rich off that.
So Idris Elba's right-hand man is Jeffrey Dean Morgan, but it doesn't matter because they have a boss. Their boss is played by Ed Harris, and he has a right-hand man as well, Samuel L. Jackson. But it doesn't matter because on top of that, there's a guy going around and messing up everything and getting in everybody's way, the good guys, the bad guys. He's just messing it up, and you don't know which side he's really on, and that's played by Dennis Quaid.
Oh, boom. Is Kurt Russell? Mic. Where's Kurt Russell in here? Is he still Mr. Nobody?
I mean, he could be in there too. Yeah, but I think I got everything covered.
You know what? 9 months, we're gonna have a baby. That works. All right, Angela, if you can top that, have at it. I can't think of anything swaggier than that.
Well, he actually stole one of mine, but I thought the only thing that could swag this movie more than what where it's already at is if you add the Sams. That's right. Samuel L. Jackson and Sam Rockwell.
Hmm. Rockwell would be fun. I don't know about swaggy.
He is the swaggiest. Oh, no. He is swaggy. That man's all swagger.
It's more. He's more like Shaggy. I don't really know if. Well, I guess no. Charlie's Angels, he had a lot of swag in that movie.
Yeah, he's super swag.
I mean, he was kind of a boob, but at the same time, he executed it with swagger in Iron Man 2 as Hammer.
True. I will give you that one. I will give you that one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think John's concoction is really, I mean, there's going to be a lot of panties left on the floor, and I mean men's panties.
Right.
Everybody's.
Lots of dudes getting pregnant that night.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I just wanted to throw that by you guys. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group called The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And also the podcast awards nominations are out. In order for us to be a finalist, we need your help. There's actually a post on thehollywoodoutsider.com to help you. But otherwise, just go to podcastawards.com. And you do a quick little login. They just want to make sure that you have a legitimate vote. Every email address you have, you can vote. Vote for The Hollywood Outsider in People's Choice and TV and Film. We would greatly appreciate it. Now, that's podcastawards.com. Now we go to Let's See Where This Goes with Angela. That's where our guest begins with any topic in film or television, whatever they want, and we see where it goes.
Okay, fellas. It kind of a twofer, but I'll start off. We'll start off with one and see how it goes. So I recently watched Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. In true Marvel fashion, you stay until the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a moron who hasn't seen the 25 movies that have come beforehand and you get up and you leave, which infuriates me every time. I digress. But, you know, so that basically you're forced to watch the credits. And so sometimes, like, while watching all these credits, it really... I understand how many people make a movie, but sometimes it still astounds me how many people are responsible for making a movie. So it kind of got me thinking that if you could have any job in the film industry, be it director, producer, cinematographer, writer, actor, whatever it is, what would it be and why would you choose that?
It's an interesting question. John, you want to field it first because you're artistic. I'm sure you already have something in mind.
Yeah, I'd be concept artist. I would love to be the guy. Andy Park is the guy that a lot of Marvel creators go to. And number one, his artwork is incredible. But he is the guy who is responsible with the look of a lot of the heroes that we're getting today. And I would love to do what he does. I would love to be the guy who is coming up with these grounded yet pay tribute to the comics in a good way, character looks. And yeah, that's what I would be doing.
That's really cool.
Pretty simple. It would just be a director. Like I'm very creative, I think. And I would love to storyboard everything. I would love to map it out. I would love to go through the script and determine exactly what I think should be shot, how it should be shot, where it should be shot. Work with everybody. I would of course like to be in control of it all.
And that's what I was waiting for.
And then, you know, because I want it to be my vision. I'm very much a visionary in that respect, that I see something and I want to make it happen. So that's what I would aspire to. I've wanted to be a director since I was a kid. So that's no big change.
Nice. I thought about it. I actually kind of have two. The more obvious one would be I would love to be the person who gets to read scripts all day. Because I love to read, and I would love to be able to have input on which films get made, like what scripts are greenlit. So I think that'd be really cool. So I actually think I have like something to bring to that, something that I have no talent for, but I totally wish I could, is I would love to be a cinematographer.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, I think like that's the most amazing part of the film. I mean, it's actually your vision, your images shot are what people see. Like, it's, yeah, I have mad respect for cinematography. I just have no talent for it.
It is
that way, I'm aware of.
It is way more complicated and difficult than I think your average Joe understands. I mean, you really go and you look at what goes into capturing that perfect shot and getting the lighting perfect and just making it pop. You know, go look at a movie like Blade Runner 2049, which I didn't love that movie. Mm-hmm. But if you go watch that movie, I mean, it's hard to not appreciate the cinematography in it, and a lot of other movies. You watch a movie with great cinematography, and it elevates whatever the script is. Even if the script is sucks, it elevates it.
Yep. What camera lens, what filter to use, all that.
Yeah, it all adds up. What's your second? Is there a second part?
Yes. My other question, because I just decided good old fun movie questions. If you could star in any film that was ever made, what would it be and why? And I mean, you could pick it for tons of reasons. It's your favorite film. You liked the script. You liked the actors. Whatever your reasons for it, what would you choose?
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Done. Indiana Jones. I would just love to play Indiana Jones just so I could wear the hat and have the whip and run from the boulder, shoot the swordsman, do all that. Yeah, Indiana. And plus, maybe make the movie before 2021. Yeah, Indiana Jones.
You can just replace him.
I mean, I don't think there is a replacing of Harrison Ford, but if there were, I would be up to the task. I think I have everything memorized, so I could really just pick up and run with the greatest hits package.
Nice. What about you, John?
That's a really tough one. I mean, do I go to the comic book route? Do I go a more serious route? Do I do an action-y route? I'm going to probably just go with like my favorite movie, which is A Life Less Ordinary. I would be in that because it's a movie that kind of talks about the magic of falling in love and how falling in love can change everything about you and how it can actually change the way you see the world. And I think that being a part of that would be a great and fun experience.
And it stars Ewan McGregor.
Dun, dun, yeah, dun. Somebody.
We went full circle. So, sorry,
Ewan.
Guys, session.
Ewan
McGregor. My pick would probably be the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Holy cow. That's a big one.
I pick it for three reasons.
Because you get to be in three movies?
Well, yeah, there's that.
You get so much exercise. Good.
But one, for the story, I love the books, you know, so you can't, there's pretty much not a better story out there. Two, the cast is amazing, and I would love to be a part of their fellowship and get the matching tattoos that they all got, which is pretty sweet. And three, they shot it for 3 years in New Zealand, like the most beautiful place ever. So I think it would just be, that would have been like a magical movie to take part in.
You know, it's possible that that's all just movie magic. And actually, New Zealand is just a dumpster town. You know, it's just crack addicts everywhere. It's just really horrendous. It looks like downtown Chicago, maybe Southside. Really, it's not really that pretty. That's like one cliff. They just shot it over and over and over. No?
They also have swear wolves.
They do have swear wolves.
Oh, my God. You're such a nerd. That's a really cool
one.
It's
Kai Waititi, so...
That would be a beautiful experience, Angela. I do agree.
Mm-hmm.
Where can we move on here? Our Patreon supporters, before we get to our reviews, I wanted to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. If you support the hoe with just $5 a month, you receive up to 2 bonus episodes a month and also some early access stuff. And so maybe do that. I don't know. It's up to you. patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We're also giving away a Blu-ray this month of either A Quiet Place or The Greatest Showman if you are a supporter. So hurry up. Your choice. It's up to you. Now, spoiler-free reviews. The first one up is The Legend of the White Tail. I'm sorry, Legend of a White Tail Deer Hunter.
No, Legacy.
It's Legacy of a White Tail Deer Hunter.
Shit. Let me start this all over.
This movie is like the bane of my existence now.
Okay, so Legacy of a White Tail Deer Hunter. My God. This movie, why does it have such a complicated title? The great hunter, Buck Ferguson, is played by Josh Brolin, and his trusted cameraman, Don, played by Danny McBride, set out for an epic weekend adventure to reconnect with Buck's young son, Jaden, who's played by Montana Jordan, which is a little too close to Jaden. I don't like that. Anyway, this movie's on Netflix, just premiered. It stems from the gang behind Eastbound and Down and Your Highness, that gem. So I only have two questions, Johnny, because you saw one. Number one, how was the acting?
It's such a hard question to answer because the thing about the acting is that it seems like they want you to not like anybody, and they succeed at that. Like, it's hard to like what's going on with the characters, and it really made me nuts.
because they're all a-holes, right? Isn't that what you said in your review?
Yeah, they're all hails. Buck, he thinks everyone should just do what he wants to do, and he's an immovable force. Jaden is the exact same character, only pint size, and he's even more retarded than his dad is. And then you have Don, who is played by Danny McBride, your favorite human being, and I tend to enjoy him in a lot of things, and he was enjoyable here. But he's also kind of gross. So it's like, what do I do with these people?
So number two, is the movie funny? That's really what people care about. Is this movie funny?
I had a hard time laughing at it, just primarily because I like, there's part of me who wanted to see the father and son succeed much sooner on, so much earlier in the movie. And so I had a hard time with it because everyone's being a jerk. The things that were happening weren't funny, and I just wanted to see them start bonding, and it just wasn't happening. So I didn't laugh as much as I had hoped I would.
Man, so I think that pretty much sums it up. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what would you give The Legacy of a White-Tailed Deer Hunter? Also, the longest title I've had to say in a long time.
Actually, if you read my review, you'll find that I found all sorts of different ways to pass up on actually typing that whole thing out. I think I gave it a 450. I'm
450.
I don't remember. 450? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even care enough to remember exactly what my score was, but it's 450.
Well, I'm glad I asked you so I could answer it. All right. Now, moving on to Won't You Be My Neighbor? Oh,
yay.
Feelings. Angela, you saw this. I saw this too, but here's what it's about. Many people know Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but this documentary wants to take a peek into the heart of the man who spent most of his adult life offering education and entertainment for children, Fred Rogers. We have his wife, his sons, his friends, and even the crew from the show are all on board to share their experiences, and then we learn a little bit more about this man who became a legend. So, Angela, a documentary is a different kind of a film to review, so I want to approach this a little bit different. You walked into this movie as a fan of Mr. Rogers. Did the movie change your opinion in any way?
It reinforced my opinion that he was a truly gem of a man.
How so? Why did the documentary? Because I think it's a hard thing to explain to people why this movie is touching so many people.
Because he truly was a good human. He was ahead of his time in regards to, without like giving away, you know, anything that you find out in this movie. He was ahead of his time, though, in regards to the way that he saw children, the way he wanted to treat them, how he wanted to speak to them, how he studied child psychology. And, you know, so I'm in awe of the fact that he was already attuned to that or in tune to that. But also at the end of the day, what you really find out is not only was that his passion and he lived it, he was just a good person. I mean, he really had a good heart. He really wanted to make a difference with children. And even we find out he wanted to try to make a difference with adults. And he was always there for people. And everybody who was in the documentary, from, like you said, coworkers to his family, said that Mr. Rogers was Mr. Rogers. So it wasn't like camera turned off and he's, you know, cursing out his neighbor. I mean, he was a really nice guy. So,
well, and that brings me to my next point. Do you feel like they dove deep enough into the man, or was it a little bit too friendly?
I don't know if it was necessarily too friendly, but I do say that was my only kind of critique is I don't personally feel like they dive that deep. You get just a little bit of, you know, his backstory. You get a little bit of like his childhood, some of the stuff from his childhood and things like that. But at the same time, this is a short documentary. It's not super long. It was an hour and a half. And I think the focus of the documentary was more on the show and a little bit on him and why the show was important to him and how he got it made, not necessarily a biopic of Mr. Rogers. So I would love to see a biopic of Mr. Rogers or a documentary that really just goes into, you know, his whole entire life. But I don't think they were too friendly to him necessarily. I just don't think that they dug very deep.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I would add one thing. There's a moment in the movie where they touch on, I don't know if you remember this part. It's, I mean, can you spoil a documentary? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But one of the cast members is a gay man. Mm-hmm. And they touch on it briefly to where, because Fred was a preacher and he had reservations about this man being gay. Now, he came around as he got older and whatnot, mm-hmm. but they gloss over it. And I feel like that was a moment where we could have learned a little bit more about him and how he dealt with his own, I don't know, what his own reservations about maybe homosexuality and other things that he overcame because he felt that everybody deserved to be appreciated in their own way. I would mm-hmm. have liked to have seen that a little bit more, where they dove a little, because they did try to dive into the man on the positive aspects, but they never wanted to go a little too dark. And mm-hmm. that's where I felt like the movie kind of lacked a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. I do think that part of the thing was during that time, I mean, this was like, it was like in the 60s when this part happened. Where
60s and 70s,
The 60s, 70s or whatever, when the actor, you know, in the show or whatever was found to be at a gay club or whatever. And that's how it kind of got brought up or whatever. And I think that it's not so much digging into Mr. Rogers. I think that was just the time, unfortunately. There wasn't that many people who were okay with homosexuality at that time in our history. So I kind of see that. I mean, I do appreciate that they were honest about it, though, that he at first was like, no, you can't be doing this. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't sugarcoat that. They could have just left that part out. But I really appreciated what that actor, you know, I'm not going to say like how he felt in the end about Mr. Rogers, but that definitely was one of the parts that really moved me. So
I just would have liked a little bit more on that. So what did you take away mm-hmm. from the film yourself? Like when you walked out, what'd you take from it?
Oh my gosh. Besides like tears, I'm telling you the last 5 minutes, woo, just reflection, you know, and looking at the world and trying to figure out where we lost a lot of our kindness. I mean, at the end of the day, that was Mr. Rogers' big thing, was to be kind to others, to be kind to children, to be kind to people that are different to you. And I think, you know, not going preachy, but we're obviously, the climate is not about kindness right now in this world. And I think I just felt a little bit of nostalgia, and also I was a little depressed. Like, I want a Mr. Rogers. I want somebody to look up to still who is just a purely good person. We don't have a lot of that out there.
That's pretty
or
much.
Or we do. I think we do. We just don't have somebody necessarily on TV that we can look up to.
I don't think it would get the same notoriety. I don't think the same media coverage. I think it feels to me, I don't want to be like fake news or anything like that. It feels to me like the coverage would be more slanted. People would be looking for the negative as opposed to shining the light. You know what I mean? It feels like that's where mm-hmm. we're at in society. And I don't know why that is or why we're so cynical at this point. But when you watch this movie, you walk out kind of feeling a little dirty. Like, I really want to be a better person. You mm-hmm. know, I just want to be better to my fellow man, to the world at large, to children. You know, I really feel like the movie leaves you with optimism. And I don't think there's enough optimism in the cinema these days. So that's a great feeling. And documentaries, how often does that happen? Usually it's some sad topic that makes you want to cry and it's finally touching, yeah. you know, a very controversial issue. And this is all happy thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even remember the last time I went to a theater. I think I've only went to a theater to watch a documentary like once too. It's not, I love documentaries. I watch documentaries, but it's not something where I normally feel like I have to go to the theater to watch it mm-hmm. to get something more out of it. But I was bugging, you know, my husband to see this since the moment I heard that it existed. So I was really excited.
Yeah, I'm with you. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I'd probably give it a 9.50. Wow. It was,
wow.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. Like I said, the only things I wish they would delve a little deeper, but I don't think it was necessarily the focus of this documentary. I think they did what they wanted to do with it. So I can't really kind of blame them for it. My own curiosity was piqued and I went home and what did I do? I tried to read everything I could find about him. So I think if anything, it spurned that in me and probably other people, the idea to want to go and read about and learn more about Mr. Rogers.
My happiest moment is when Eddie Murphy shows up as Mr. Robinson. Oh, such joy.
And it's cute that Mr. Rogers liked that.
Well, it's funny.
Like he got it.
It's funny.
It is funny.
So follow up, and John, actually, I'll go to you. You could join in this part.
I'm here.
Yeah, you're still here. Do we need more positive entertainers like Mr. Rogers? And do you think one can even exist today in this age?
I'd like to think that somebody can exist in today's day and age. And I think right now, more than ever, that we do need somebody like that out in the open. And unfortunately, it does have to be like a pure unicorn of a person, because as soon as somebody comes out as being this bright, shining light of goodness and hope, there are going to be people working on tearing down everything about them in the background, just because that's the kind of world we live in. I think we've spent too much time in this post or in this world of you know, bitch millionaire women living in houses and the Jersey Shore people and all and Big Brother, all this and all these other reality things where people are being mean to one another and tearing one another down gets you ahead in these sorts of things. I'm tired of living in a world where something like this is what people look at. And I think the downside of it is that people look at it because they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm watching it because I'm watching somebody be an a-hole and it's funny to me, but I know that's not what I want to be. But I also think that there's always a bit of whatever you're imbibing kind of seeping into you and kind of becoming part of you. And I think starting to work on avoiding that is what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. Hallelujah. I would concur all he said. I don't really need to reiterate, but yeah, the world needs it.
Sorry. I didn't mean the monologue on that. I just got, you know.
No, we need somebody with a positive background and good attitude and a cape and just comes in. You know, we need Tom Hanks to basically
pull a hope on his
chest.
We
need Tom Hanks, yes, who is going to play Mr. Rogers in an upcoming film.
Oh, is he really?
Yes.
Okay, I'm on board with that. That sounds fantastic.
He played Walt Disney. Why not Mr. Rogers?
He was great in that movie, too, so I'm okay with that.
He did, but Walt Disney, he had some baggage. Mr. Rogers is like,
Yeah, right? Pretty easy.
Well, everyone in the 60s had baggage. We just didn't like show it to everybody like we do now.
Mm. Now we take a picture of it and we send it to them.
I'm like, look at this. I am so proud of how terrible my life was.
Mm. All right. Now let's go to new releases, Johnny. What's coming out? What do we got?
All right. Up first, we have, based off the 1996 gem that starred Anna Nicole Smith, we have Skyscraper.
Wait, what?
Is this for real?
Well, there's actually a movie from 1996 called Skyscraper starring Anna Nicole Smith, but it's not based off of that. Anyhow,
I saw that movie. I did.
Did you?
Yes. It's terrible.
Well, it starred Anna Nicole Smith. I mean, come on. So a father goes to great lengths to save his family from a burning skyscraper. This is written and directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber and stars Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, otherwise known as one of the men that my wife would throw me down a set of stairs for, Neve Campbell, Pablo "Don't Call Me Lee" Shriver, and Noah Taylor. And then we have a special guest here. Special guest, take it away.
Hello, my name is Drac. I am back. See what I did there? I rhymed. I am here to talk to you about my new movie, Hotel Transylvania. It stars Adam Sandler. He plays me, the coolest vampire to ever walk amongst the vampires. And it also co-stars all of his friends that otherwise would not have a job. While on vacation with the family, Count Dracula makes a romantic connection. So I make a very romantic connection. I find a love. I don't know why I also have a Spanish accent, but I do. This is a very funny film. I think you're going to like it very much. But I just wanted to take a minute to please promote my movie. And now I am a little bit of an Italian Dracula. But whatever happens, monsters, they will take over the sheep. It will be very funny. Again, I am Spanish. And the worst vampire of all time. But I am Dracula. Go see my movie. Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation. That is all. Have a good day. Love the show.
Oh, and thanks so much for coming to the show and telling us all about that. Following that up, we have Siberia. Acting Syreira, on what has happened to me tonight?
I don't know what just happened. I have no idea what you just did. Other than...
He's acting, clearly.
Yeah, acting! It's like, is there a director in your house? I don't know what the hell is going on, man.
Right? We have Syreira coming on VOD on 7/13, and it's when an American diamond trader's Russian partner goes missing. He journeys to Syreira in search of him, but instead falls in love instead because, well, we don't really need partners. Falling in love is more important. This is directed by Matthew Ross, stars Anna Lara, Keanu Reeves, Molly Ringwald, and Alex Panovic. It's my final offer. And then finally, we have The Devil's Doorway, out on VOD on 7/13 as well. It's basically a 1960s found footage movie. In the fall of 1960, Father Thomas Riley and Father John Thornton were sent to the Vatican to investigate a miraculous event of at an Irish home for fallen women. That's always a party. Only did it uncover something more horrific. Well, they're in a home, an Irish home for fallen women. Can you imagine what that could possibly be? This is directed by Asleen Clark. And is a whole bunch of Irish names in here to say, and I'm not going to try it.
Okay.
Just add the O in front of all their names.
Right. All right. So, Angela, you're our guest. Please don't let the scary man frighten you into whatever that movie was. What are you going to go see this upcoming week?
To be honest, I don't think I'll probably see any of them, but I would say the one that I'm more intrigued by is Syreira, because Keanu Reeves and Molly Ringwald in a movie. Like, soon as you said that, I was like, ding, I need to see what this is all about. So I'd probably pick Syreira.
What, Aaron?
Well, I'm pretty sure Molly Ringwald will work for chicken nuggets at this point. So that's not really a big sell for me. I will honestly, as Skyscraper looks like total Die Hard ripoff with a prosthetic leg. It's The Rock Johnson. Yeah, but Rampage really kind of was meh for me. So I'm not really, I need a rock break. I need paper. So I'm going to go with Hotel Transylvania because I like those movies and I'm not ashamed of it.
I might follow suit with that. I might have to say Hotel Transylvania as well. The other ones on VOD, they look fun and interesting, except for that whole like 1960s found footage. Yay, it's grainy. Awesome. it's all on a much smaller screen, so you're actually looking at a huge screen, but it's all really tiny. No. I think that I want some fun, and as much as I want to support The Rock, I don't need to see Peg Leg Die Hard.
Peg Hard.
That's a different movie.
Okay, well, let's move on to our From the Outside In topic. Skyscraper's coming out. We just talked about it. The Rock has a prosthetic leg. It's a weird choice. It could be a fantastic plot point or just one of those weird-ass character choices that make little to no sense. Then there are characters like Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11 who's eaten in every scene. Why? I don't know, but he has a fantastic metabolism is all I can think of. This week, we're going to discuss some of the weirdest or most intriguing character devices or choices in entertainment, and it can be film or television. Whether it be the actor's choice, maybe it was actually written, I don't know, but it's just some weird thing the character did to make you go, what? So have you ever been watching something and found something the character did as just a crazy distraction? Maybe it even completely took you out of the movie or TV show?
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind, and I'm not going to earn any fans here for this one because I know there's a lot of people who really, really like this show. And I really don't actually dislike the show, but it's something that bothers me about a character in it that it's hard for me to get into it. And that would be Rick from Rick and Morty. And it's the fact that Rick is constantly burping and drooling like the whole entire show.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, you know, my husband's a huge fan. I mean, he loves the show and he's always trying to get me to watch it with him. And sometimes I can handle it. And sometimes I'm just like, it's such a turnoff for me and I can't stand watching it. And the only other one I kind of came to mind, and it's like you said, you know, sometimes these character traits could be because of, or these, you know, weird things that they do could be because it's written that way. And the one that where an actor just is this way is Kristen Stewart. She always has her mouth agape, like half like open. And it like, I can't stand it. And I mean,
that's funny. So that's really an actor thing. Like she just constantly has her mouth open. You're like, put something in it, eat something.
Yes. I just like want to walk up with my finger and just like push her jaw up. Just shut it.
Rick and Morty, I want to go back real quick. That's exactly why I can't get into that show. Same exact. And I know John loves it, and I know a lot of people love it. My buddy Rob loves it.
Actually, I've never seen it.
Oh, I thought you did love it.
No, I never seen Rick and Morty.
Well, then I retracted that. I spoke for you, and I shouldn't have. Shame on me. Give me a spanking. Give me a spanking. That's how I should have said it.
This show's getting really weird all of a sudden.
Yeah, I can't stand that. Every time I try to watch it, it completely makes me not want to watch anymore. I just find it gross, and it's just not something that I get into.
Yeah.
And now I can't watch. I mean, not that I was going to rewatch Twilight, but if I ever did, all I'm going to do is stare at that girl's mouth. Just like, why won't you close it?
It's like every movie.
My big one is Jeff Bridges in every movie after True Grit where he sounds like Rooster Cogburn.
Yeah.
That's just, it's definitely a choice. You hear him in interviews and he sounds like Jeff Bridges again, but then you see him in a movie and it's like half the movies he's done, if not three quarters of the movies he's done since that movie. Apparently, like, it was so successful. He just said, I'm going to do this all the time. People love me all the time.
You know what's painful is watching the first Iron Man and then watching something after the first Iron Man. And you go, oh, come on, man. You're clearly capable of something.
Yeah. It's why after True Grit did he have to both sound gruff as well as like he always had something in his mouth? Always. I mean, he and Kristen Stewart should hang out because he's got something in his mouth he could give to her and it would solve both problems. As gross as that sounds.
It's pretty gross.
Johnny, what about you?
So the two that came to mind the fastest were ones that were from a particular universe. So we have two different characters from two point in times in the Star Wars universe. The first of them being General Grievous. So he's a head essentially of a person or a lizard thing inside a robotic thing that these are the people who created Darth Vader's outfit, and he has COPD. Why does he have COPD? Why is he? That's not scary. I mean, Darth Vader's breathing, that's scary, but then they up the ante to him having a wet cough, and that's just gross. I never understood it, and it made me crazy, and I just wanted, I was glad to see him die. Sorry for spoilers, but he dies. And then the other one that kind of threw me off was DJ in The Force Awakens. No, I'm sorry, not The Force Awakens, Last Jedi. So DJ, played by Guillermo del Toro, he has a stutter. So, and the only reason
Benicio
I can...
Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, they're both the same person.
I was really racking my brain. I'm like, wait a second. Was Guillermo in this movie?
Yeah, I'm like, did they give him a cameo? I don't remember that, but continue, sure.
Anyhow, Benicio del Toro in... What the hell was the movie again?
The Last Jedi.
Oh, yeah, The Last Jedi. So... Why does he need to have a stutter? The only thing I can think of is that like he showed up on set and he looked too damn cool to like he can't out cool anyone. So it's like, okay, Benicio, Guillermo, whatever your name is, can you do me a favor? Can you come up with a weird character trait because you just look too cool next to Finn and this girl that everybody hates already?
I feel like he is one of those actors, especially after Sicario and Usual Suspects, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. I think he's one of those actors where he just has to do something unique every time or he doesn't feel happy. He probably introduced that. It's kind of like Sicario where he's got to finger the gun and use his index finger to repeatedly pull the trigger instead of pulling it like a normal person would. I'm sure you've seen that in the trailer. He just does weird stuff. I think it's just how he is, both him and Guillermo.
Right. Can you say that again? Because it sounded hot.
No, because I know I said it wrong. All right. Well, so, yeah. Have you you found yourself fascinated by some weird character choice or device? Like riveted. Don't pick your favorites, though. Pick somebody else.
Well, the first one that comes to mind. So we just started watching Killing Eve. And the whole time, the first couple episodes, every time a specific character was on the screen, after about 5 or 6 minutes of him being on the screen, I'd start laughing. And it's the character Bill, because anytime he starts getting stressed out or he gets upset about something or something stressful starts to happen, he wants cake. I don't know why he wants cake, but it sounds like a good idea. And I can't wait to have cake every single time I'm stressed out now, thanks to Bill.
Okay. That's a weird one, but I get it. I kind of see where you're coming from, and now I want some cake.
Right. It's just something that's funny. It's something small that a character really shouldn't be doing in a spy thriller kind of with a serial killer in it. You know, it's not that sort of thing, but they, but it, it to me, and the reason why I like it so much is that if the entire creative team came up with it and said, hey, let's do this, and or the actor comes up with it and says, hey, let's really bring this character down to the level and give him this trait, I just think there's so much thought put into that, and I, that's why I fall in love with it so much. I get, and unfortunately, half the time I'll love it for about 5-10 minutes, and then I'll forget that it ever existed down the road.
That's kind of funny. Angela, do you have one? I mean, we can throw some more out there, but is there one that really caught your eye and fascinated you?
Yeah, I actually had a couple. Mine more are based on, I guess you could say, instead of like actual, like, you know, eating a cake or whatever, but more on like personality types and the way they're portrayed. And the ones that come to mind that I really, really love are when a character is crazy, super happy, super optimistic. So the people that came to mind for that, were Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec, Kimmy Schmidt from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
That's a good one.
And Mabel Pines from Gravity Falls. So I really like super joyful, happy people. And I like to see it. I think I try to connect with that type of a character. So anything where a person's, you know, super going for it and is happy all the time, I like. But on the other side, the other character choice that I seem to like is the total opposite of that, which is like somebody who's totally like dark and macabre. And like the characters I thought of for that are like Wednesday Addams from the Addams Family and April Ludgate from Parks and Rec. I love seeing somebody portray like a character who's totally deadpan and has real no emotions and is just kind of dark and their own, you know, eccentric characters. So those are like the types of characters that I tend to gravitate towards and like.
You know what I like about Kimmy Schmidt is that that actress has to work out just to smile like her.
Oh my God, she does.
There's no other way to explain it, but Kimmy Schmidt smiles in such a way that I don't think a normal human being can naturally want to smile that way. So this actress is like doing some sort of workout, like she's biting down on stuff just to strengthen up her face muscles just to be able to smile that way.
And yeah, on the same token, Kristen Stewart is trying to frown with her mouth open.
That's an amazing feat if you really think about it.
It really is. I used to love that David Addison would burst into song. That was always a fun character thing that was just weird and amazing at the same time, because I'd watch Moonlighting and he'd just be talking and then would start singing. And to me, that was like the happiest thing ever. That's when I thought, hey, it's cool. You can go into an office and you could just start singing. I found out later in life you can't, and you can actually go to HR for that. So it's important not to do that. A big one for me is Forrest Gump. I realized that Tom Hanks was supposed to portray him as a slow simpleton, but there's something I thought surreal about the way that he emphasizes letters or cuts words short, you know, the whole Jenna, you know, just that whole thing. There's something that added a childlike innocence to the role that I thought was just amazing to watch. And I'll always remember watching that movie and just being enamored with his performance. I know some people now make fun of it and like say it wasn't that great and he didn't deserve an Oscar and all that. I'm like, BS, man. I think that's one of the best acting roles of the last 30 years. I really do, because you have an actor who played a character that could have been so offensive, and even in this day and age, could have been so offensive in so many ways and wasn't ever, I don't think. I really feel like he elevated that type of person and type of performance. And it was just amazing to watch.
You know, the reason why he spoke that way was he was doing an impression of the little boy that played him. Yeah. Because when Zemeckis, they were trying to determine if the little boy needed to learn to speak like how Tom Hanks was going to be or what. And Tom's like, well, let me just do the little boy, because he was from Missouri and he had that very distinct dialect, and Tom Hanks found it really fascinating. So he matched the way the little boy spoke. So that's why it comes across with, I guess, that childlike innocence too throughout the performance.
Also, you never go full Sean Penn.
Yeah, he went too far. Could have had the Oscar. Could have had it. Didn't. Speaking of Forrest Gump, Nate Bruce in our Facebook group, he added that it was weird that Forrest Beck was crooked as a question mark, but he could run really fast, run marathons, run while carrying soldiers on his back. Yeah, it was different. You know, mm-hmm. But that was part of the charm, I thought, of the character.
Well, also, I don't think that doctor actually took an X-ray. It was 60s. The doctor would just be like, yeah, it's crooked. Okay.
Kind of like licked his finger, put it in the air. Crooked.
Right. Yeah.
I getcha.
He had leg braces. Yeah. I mean, that fixed it.
And
right?
He ran them off.
Yeah.
That's how you deal with injuries. I keep telling people, when you get injured, just go run.
Right.
It's science.
Wait a minute. You tell me the exact opposite of that half the time I'm injured.
You know what? I don't want you to get better. I want you to stay incapacitated so you can keep doing the podcast with me. Otherwise, you know, you'll be out doing stuff. Another one was Anthony Perkins in Psycho for me as Norman Bates. I remember seeing that performance. And if he wouldn't have played it the way he did, where he's kind of, I mean, similar to Forrest Gump in that innocence way, but also just kind of very, very naive. And then until he's threatened, and when he's threatened, the immediate switch in his tone was a very distinct character choice that really, really sold you on caring for that character. And even by the end, when you find out what a horrible person he kind of is, you still care for that character. And it's all because of the way that he played him. And I really found that just a fascinating study and character choices too. All right, so let's drop our top three weirdest or most intriguing character choices or devices. And these little ticks that just completely stayed with you, whatever the reason are, they're your reasons. You give us your three when we call your name. You ready, Angela? You're up first. So what's your top three weirdest or most intriguing character choices?
Okay, so my first one is Captain Jack Sparrow from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, played by Johnny Depp, who in itself, Johnny Depp, you could probably pick just about any character he's ever played, and he would fit somewhere in this like interesting or unique character devices or choices. But in this one in particular, he plays, you know, Captain Jack. He's campy. He's over the top. He basically looks like he's drunk on rum at any given time. And I mean, it's a full transformation from his look to his speech to his movements. And he had, which I really respect, he chose a lot of he chose the way he wanted to portray Jack Sparrow. Disney actually didn't like the way that he had originally portrayed him.
Yeah, they hated it.
But I mean, yeah, they hated it. I mean, he even like put the gold teeth.
He capped his own teeth.
He capped his teeth. And like I read that by the last movie, he finally had enough what he really wanted. Cause he like wanted almost all of his teeth like gold and capped. At the end of the day, what he's doing is a Keith Richards impression.
Oh, Pepe Le Pew and Keith Richards.
Yeah, basically. If for whatever reason, it really works. It was enjoyable and it made Disney a lot of money. So
yeah, that's one of the, I mean, honestly, all time, if you're going to talk about character choices, it's got to be one of the all time greatest ones in film history, because Johnny Depp has always been known for being wacky, but he wasn't known for being that wacky until that movie. And that's when he just took it full. I mean, Edward Scissorhands, sure, but this took it to a whole nother level. And by no means should he have been the star of a giant swashbuckler franchise where he basically wanders around drunk half the time, but he made it work.
Yep. Yeah. And he totally was not supposed to be the star, but okay. So my second choice, we're going to go the TV route. And my second pick is Terry Jeffords from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, played by the awesome and amazing Terry Crews. So the character, there's lots of things about this character that are unique and interesting. I love the fact that the character's name is Terry.
Of course.
Played by Terry, which I have read that they basically, this character is as close to Terry as they could get with just a little added like craziness to it. So that made me really happy. Outside of that, he is always eating yogurt. Terry loves yogurt. He does this thing where he flexes and he moves his man pecs around, which is always fun to see. But my favorite weird quirk that Terry Jeffords has is that he talks about himself in the third person. It doesn't work in a lot of, you know, for a lot of people, but it totally works for him. Like, Terry loves love. Terry loves yogurt.
That's awesome.
I love it.
Does Angela love it? Angela loves it.
Angela loves it.
Yeah.
Angela loves Terry. Angela loves 99.
99.
And my last pick is Willy Wonka from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And this is the one starring Gene Wilder, not the Johnny Depp Charlie and the Chocolate Factory one. I chose this for a couple of reasons, but the big thing is it's actually similar to what you were talking about with Anthony Perkins in Psycho, where he plays innocence. And then when he goes to menace, like that, you know, it's like a snap and you can just, the character change is so drastic. Gene Wilder does that brilliantly in this movie. He is, you know, full of joy, zaniness, weirdness 1 minute, and the very next he switches to like total seriousness. Mm-hmm. And while doing that, and this is another, you know, thing attributed to Gene Wilder's awesomeness, is he's got those amazing blue eyes. And while he's on either side of being a super joyful Willy Wonka or he's very serious and kind of creepy Willy Wonka, he always seems to have something menacing, or he's thinking of something in the background. Like there's an extra layer to the character. And one thing that I found really cool is Gene Wilder, when he wanted to accept this role, he only accepted it if he could have control of how Willy Wonka entered the movie. And so the scene in the beginning with, you know, where Willy Wonka's faking, where he's an old man with a cane and he comes out and then he rolls into a somersault and then jumps up and he's like, you know, super happy guy. That was all Gene Wilder's thinking, because he wanted to set up the character where you didn't trust him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So So the whole time you're kind of like, what's going on with this guy? You know, like he seems so great, but he also seems really dark, and he does such a good job of that.
That's really good. And I would add Johnny Depp as Willy Wonka is nowhere near as layered and well-defined as Gene Wilder's.
Not at all. He's a cartoon character compared to Gene Wilder's.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not that we don't love Johnny Depp. He's done some really good work. That's a terrible character, though.
Yeah, I hated that version. I absolutely hated it. So
I love most of Johnny Depp's. I have Lone Ranger and you can kiss my ass all day, people. I love that movie. So
Nick of Time.
Well, all right. I'm not going to give you that one. I'm not going to. It's Real Time. Yeah, Real sucks. All right, so Johnny, what are your top three weirdest or most intriguing?
So the first one I'm going to talk about is a little bit weird because a lot of people don't mention this movie a lot, but in Once Upon a Time in Mexico, you have Mickey Rourke, and Mickey Rourke plays this gangster called Billy, and Billy has a chihuahua. The chihuahua's name is Moco. Wherever Billy goes, he's got Moco with him, which for those who don't know, Moco means little snot in Spanish. So it's interesting to see somebody with Mickey Rourke's stature, his menacing abilities, and all this other stuff have this cute little dog with him. And for whatever reason, maybe because I'm a big guy who has cute little dogs, it just sticks with me to know that it's okay. And the interesting facts about Moco was that that's one of Mickey Rourke's actual dogs. His name is Jaws, and it was one of his favorite dogs. And he attributes the return of his career to his little batch of dogs that he's had throughout the years. I think at one point he's had up to seven of them at one time. I think he's down to five, but it's just cool that he had to make these dogs part of his life and his career like that.
Does he put one down for every year that his career declines? Sorry.
Angela, I'm not going to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Could you let Aaron know that I'm not acknowledging his putting a dog down joke?
All right.
Aaron, John's like not acknowledging your putting down dog joke.
I don't appreciate it. It was a good one. It was solid.
All right. And then I'm going to do the same thing Angela did. I'm going to switch over to TV, and I want to talk to you guys about a little bit of a character by the name of Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec. Really, as far as Parks and Rec go, he is probably one of the shiniest, brightest lights in this whole thing. And the thing that people forget is that Andy in that show was an accident. Mm-hmm. He wasn't supposed to make it beyond the first season, but Chris Pratt played him in such a lovable way. Even though he is an annoying, self-centered man-child for that first season, he is played in such a lovable way that people insisted on having him back, and he developed that character a lot on his own. He came up with a lot of the things that he said, and he and that's really a lot of him on the screen that we're seeing. And really, we have to thank Andy Dwyer for a lot of the cool things that Chris Pratt is giving us today, because that's really what launched him out into the open and made him such a household name, was just this goofy character who did nothing but make you smile, brought you joy. And he was like the inner man child in all of us that was okay to be there.
Mm-hmm. I love Andy.
Aaron, you seem suspiciously quiet.
I don't really watch the show, so I don't really have anything to say. Good pick.
Well, see, that's all you had to say, and now I feel better.
I watched like 3 or 4 episodes and was just bored. So I know everybody raves about it, and they're like, get to season 2. Yeah, I'm not watching a whole season of anything. So I'm glad people like it. It's just not for me. I'm not knocking it. It just wasn't for me.
And then the final thing I want to talk about, which we can almost do an entire synopsis and show and book report on this whole thing, which is all of the doctors from Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them is somebody different. Every single one of them, one of those actors brings something of their own to that character. They approve and sign off on the costume choices for that character. They each have done something to make this character that everyone, at least in England and some parts of the United States, adore for like the last 60 years. You have Alon Z, you have Geronimo, you have a doctor with a scarf that was accidentally made too long because a costume designer was given a whole bunch of yarn and they said make a scarf, so she used all of it to make this ridiculously long scarf. And the actor, Tom Baker, said, hey, I like it like this. And they found a way to make it work for the show. And he actually used it as a way to lasso up things and save himself from things. It's really interesting to see that this character, though it's the Doctor, and though the Doctor has been with us for so many years, each character has made it their own and found a way to make him endearing to all of us who watch the show.
Agreed. I totally. And now we have to be careful how we say that, because it's.
Oh, herself. That's right.
Herself. Yeah. His or herself.
You know, side note, you know who was almost the first female doctor back in 2009?
No, I do not know.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Whoa.
Now I'm back in this conversation.
Like Aaron checked in. I'm checking out.
Yep.
Like, eh.
I dig her. I like Catherine Zeta-Jones. Like,
I mean, she is Welsh. So she's got that going for her.
What the hell does that mean? I don't even know. What does that mean?
She's from Wales.
Well, no, I get what Welsh means. I'm like, why is that?
Because the doctor is British.
Oh, okay. I don't watch it.
You're missing out. You want to talk about something?
Doctor, so she's in the same area.
I watched like 5 of those, and I just can't get into it. So apparently I just can't get into your stuff, Johnny. You need to watch better stuff.
It's fine, though, because the two things I'm talking about are things that bring joy and happiness to the world. So
that's why I don't care. Yeah, that makes sense. Because actually, all 3 of mine, none of them bring joy or happiness to the world.
Okay, way to follow this up and bring us all to a down. We should have totally round-robin this out.
Yeah,
but anyhow,
we should have. My first one is Fenster from The Usual Suspects, who's played by Guillermo del Toro. No, Benicio del Toro plays him, and it's...
I've heard it both ways.
The way he speaks, mumbling his words in an almost indecipherable way, is an acting choice I had never seen before and I could not look away from. And I honestly, for the longest time, because you got to remember this, Usual Suspects came out long before Del Toro was either one of them, was a name. And I thought that was actually how that guy spoke. I'm like, that can't be a character choice. That's just who the actor is. You know, they just found a guy who mumbled a lot. No, that was all acting, and it was so brilliant and annoying at the same time. And it's just one that stuck with me over and over through the years. I just love that character and that particular choice.
That is a good one. I love the whole scene at the lineup, and they had to ask him several times what he was saying, and then he blurts it all out. I love it.
So good. Number 2, definitely not a light and upbeat performance, though I think he tries to help near the end. But George Clooney in From Dusk Till Dawn as one of the Gecko brothers. He's just to this day, still my favorite performance of George Clooney. I really feel like it's the only performance that he really pushed himself to do completely different than what he does in just about everything else. But I also thought maybe he's epileptic, you know, in this movie, because his head was bobbing around so much. Every single scene, his head is just bobbing around. And for the, I would probably say for a good 3 to 6 months after I saw that movie, I totally copied that head bob every time I was talking to people and I meant something serious. You know, I would, if I was really dead serious, my head would bop around when I was talking to him. I'd look him sternly in the eye and also kind of like bop my head around. It's a weird thing. I acknowledge that, but it's also a really cool, badass character moment and probably my number two of all time. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Did you watch ER? I'm like, that was just a thing that George Clooney did back then. I actually saw an interview. George Clooney said that Steven Spielberg had told him when at the height of ER that in order for him, he's like, you're really talented. You could be a movie star, but you got to stop moving your head around all the time.
Yeah, I know it was like, but I didn't really watch ER, so it wasn't as pronounced. I mean, I saw a couple episodes. But From Dusk Till Dawn, it was just so cool, and he did it. And I know he did it in like a bunch of movies after that, and he finally stopped doing it. But it was really just, I just thought it was badass, man. And it was just weird, and it was a cool little, I don't think that character's as cool if he's not doing all that head bobbing.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, he's also talking at you through his eyebrows.
That's true. That's true. And he's always just moving around, and I'm maybe a bastard, I'm not an effing bastard. He's saying cool dialogue. I mean, it's just, it's the coolest performance he's ever going to do in his career, yeah, as far as I'm concerned. But number one, and this is, it's kind of an easy one, but it's also, I think, almost revolutionary in a way. I mean, it just, Heath Ledger was a revelation as the Joker, an absolute revelation. I was on board, don't put that guy in that role because he's going to suck. And that's probably the most crow I've ever eaten, and a lot of fans have ever eaten. He was fantastic. He took it to a different level. He changed how villains were for the future. Like, to this day, a lot of the villains we see in that really gel in comic book movies and movies of all kinds are very similar to the Joker in that fashion, that they're more grounded, more realistic, less over the top, less Arnold Schwarzenegger. So one of the things that he did, though, or actually two things he did in that movie, was he continuously did this thing where he flicked his tongue like a lizard, very reptilian. And I think everybody remembers that one, right? He smacked his mouth and the skittish kind of nervous tick can away. Everybody remembers that one, which is a big one. That's just a fantastic character choice. But another thing he did, and if you watch the movie, it's really pronounced, but I don't think you realize it the first time you watch it, but he also makes sure to never look at his victims when he kills them. He always looks away. And that to me was just such a subtle, really interesting choice that stuck with me, because I remember watching it for the second movie, never realizing that, and then just seeing like he looks away every single time he kills somebody. It's just fascinating to me. I just thought that was really cool.
That is very cool. I do like that portrayal of that character. The other thing that people don't realize is that he's essentially pulled some of his inspiration for the character from Tom Waits.
No, I didn't know that. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you see some interviews with Tom Waits from the early 80s or mid 80s or whatever, and it's that character. It's the Joker.
That's really awesome. Mm-hmm. Just an all-around you know, and I hate that he got the Oscar and it was post-death, posthumously. It's just, to me, it always feels like they weren't really 100% giving it to him, but he totally 100% deserved it. Part of me will always feel like, you just did that because he passed away. If he wouldn't have passed away, would Hollywood have really recognized a comic book role? I hope so, but I really doubt it based on everything else I've seen from them.
But it totally deserved.
Oh, no, absolutely. Totally deserved. I just mean Hollywood is, you know, they would have given it to whoever was playing the dying guy, you know, that year. Because that's always more important.
Of course.
Those are some great ones. And we've got a few listener ones we'll mention real quick. And then, of course, if you guys have some more you want to throw in, find the Facebook post for the Hollywood on the Hollywood Outsider group. And be sure to throw yours in there, because we love reading what you guys, after you listen to the show, what you thought, as well as on Twitter, wherever. Just let us know which ones you kind of came up with. But we've got a couple listener comments that came in. So, Angela, what are your two? I think you got two.
Yeah. The first one I have comes from David McGrath. And he said, I think the first one that comes to mind is Edward Scissorhands. Very imaginative and led to some scary, funny, and dramatic moments in the movie. And speaking of Johnny Depp, why the hell did he put that dead bird on top of his head for the duration of The Lone Ranger? Bizarre choice, but he somehow made it work. I liked it.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know if that was going to work out till the end there. Good for you, David.
Yeah, that's a good one. And again, that's what we were touching on. Johnny Depp has so many interesting characters, like, under his in his career. So he's definitely an easy one. And then my second listener comment comes from Tomas Bex. He said Nicolas Cage decided that having Ghost Rider constantly eat jelly beans while in human form was a good idea. Because of course.
That's true. That is true. Why? That doesn't make any sense. What does one have to do with the other?
Well, you know, he burns up so many calories. He's gotta eat those calories back in.
Okay. You know what? Weirdly, that makes sense.
I know. Right. I know. That's like Box of Flies. That right. makes total sense.
Except Box of Flies doesn't. So, John, what are your comments, your two listener comments?
All right. So from Andreas, we have, Myang is Richard Harrow from show Boardwalk Empire. Fascinating mask and creepy, which it is. I haven't seen the show, but I've seen this mask and this character, and I know he's wildly popular, but it is a very interesting and cool idea. He's wearing one of those prosthetic eye masks from the 1930s or 40s, whenever the show takes place, which is those things were a piece of art on their own, where people were trying to replace different body parts with like masks. Then we have from Jennifer Miller, the spider head in John Carpenter's A Thing. Oh my God. It was like the movie stopped and I couldn't stop seeing, thinking about that character. When I was a kid, that thing messed me up.
Did it really?
It doesn't work anymore. But the first time I saw it, it was at Christmas, because of course it was at Christmas time. And it was a family get together during Christmas Eve. And all of us were in one of the rooms watching that movie, and that spider head, like, Merry Christmas, spider head in your nightmares in the snow. Awesome.
You guys watched The Thing at Christmas?
It was the 80s and nobody watched us. Remember that? Yeah. Remember those times?
So does that make it a Christmas movie? I think so.
Well, for us, it was in Panama. So for us, it had snow. That's all it needed to be a Christmas movie.
Fair enough.
It explains a lot, John.
Yeah,
it does. Explains a lot.
Let's see. I got Scott Cargaro. He says, why is Indiana Jones afraid of snakes? And why did they turn it into such a running joke in the movies? It always seemed odd to me. Yeah. I mean, especially when you think about that his whip looks like a snake. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just a kind of a cool thing they did as a, hey, look, later on, we're going to have a pit full of snakes and we can't just let this joke die. We got to keep bringing it back. And we also have to explain exactly why he's afraid of them.
I just love that. It also... because heroes are always supposed to be like perfect and not have like any fears and not be able to be beaten and everything. And here you go, starting off right off the bat with knowing that he's a scaredy cat. He's got a real phobia. I mean, it's a valid phobia, but I always like that. That's, you know, they humanized him.
Me too. Cause I'm petrified of bees and I have a personal childhood issue that caused that. So I totally get where Indy's coming from. So Scott Calgaro, I don't appreciate what you're insinuating. He is a man. He is a man. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Men have flaws.
I used to be afraid of bridges.
What?
I used to be afraid of bridges.
Cause you were from Panama and you didn't have one to get to America or what?
That's not how it works. I never could explain it, but there was a time up until like my late teens where I even driving over, it was a bridge that went over water. Any bridge that went over water kind of gave me the sweats.
Was it a bridge that went over troubled water?
Maybe. Now we're getting a little too deep into this.
This is so weird. It's just the weirdest thing ever. All right. Scott Clark. You might remember him. He used to be on the show regularly. While it might not be a favorite, Jake Gyllenhaal's excessive blinking in Prisoners stood out to me. It was borderline distracting, but still made for an interesting character quirk.
That's a really good one.
Mm-hmm. That's a great movie, too.
It's a great movie, but I remember, this is what I'm talking about. There's ones that I thought were amazing, but I forgot about them, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually add, if you're going to, speaking of Gyllenhaal, go watch Nightcrawler, because that entire performance is all over the map with ticks and nuances, and why he didn't get an Oscar nomination for that role, I'll never get, because he does a lot of cool things with that role too.
Bubble Boy. That's another one.
Is it though? Are you sure? All right, guys. Well, thank you. I hope you really enjoyed the topic. I think it's a really cool topic. Be sure to go in the Facebook group and you can throw in some of yours. I'm sure people are starting to get, because I know some people are like, I don't get it. So now I think you can get what we were going for. And I bet you'll come up with some cool ones. We're going to close out here before we get to our Ant-Man and the Wasp spoiler cast. But Angela, any recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't already talked about you want to recommend or mention?
Sure. Just quick, I just finally got to watching the new season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So if you're a fan of that show, the new season does not disappoint. If you've never watched it, what's wrong with you?
Is it the final season?
Go watch it. Yeah, it is the final season. They only released 6 episodes, and I believe the plan is to release 6 more. So, and then another Netflix thing that came to mind was Netflix has been releasing, like, they've been hitting it, I feel like, out of the park lately with like different movies that they've been doing. But there was a romantic comedy called Set It Up that starred Zoe Deutsch, or I think that's how you say her name, and Glenn Powell, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it was a really good reminiscent of like classic 90s rom-coms. Like, it was good stuff.
You know what makes me sad about that movie?
What's that?
Glenn Powell was up same role that Miles Teller got in Top Gun 2. Glenn Powell is amazing, and Miles Teller is whatever the opposite of amazing is. I don't get it.
He's a douche canoe.
He is, but isn't Glenn Powell? He's great, though, right?
He's great. They have great chemistry. Like, I felt like I was watching like Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. They had really good chemistry together.
I would so watch Top Gun 2 quicker if Glenn Powell was in it.
Yeah.
Can we get a campaign or something? Like a write-in campaign? Or
I'm sure if you ask enough people, they'll do it for you.
We could just get a bunch of people to make like physical douche canoes and send them to Tom Cruise and say, you don't want this.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. In the age of Twitter, because apparently you can ruin somebody's life with Twitter, all you got to do is get everyone to just tweet at whoever you need to tweet at.
All right. John, anything from you?
The new season of Blue Bloods, my TV dad's current show, it came out on Netflix, and I watched all of that, and I'm sure some stuff happened. I don't know. I saw my TV dad for 22 straight hours, so that was kind of nice. There is another show that just recently released starring Paula Patton on Netflix, and it's I think it's a Canadian import. It's called Somewhere Between, and if you can get past all the melodrama that some of these Canadian shows, I think it's Canadian, anyhow, if you can get past some of the melodrama that it has in it, it has a lot of great ideas behind time travel and fate. And it's about her and the guy from Idle Hands or the other movie with a Final Destination movie, the first one. Her and that guy are trying to save people's life from a serial killer. So it's pretty interesting so far. It's just a little too melodramatic, but still interesting.
All right. I am getting caught up on Hawaii Five-0, which I am finally way through season 8 or almost halfway through. I've been watching the hell out of it. And I originally was against it. I didn't like the first couple episodes because I'm like, where's my Chin and Kono? Because, you know, they left because of pay discrepancies and whatnot. They have new characters and they're really starting to gel. I'm loving the new season. So I'm at the point where I don't really miss. I mean, I miss Chin a little bit. I don't miss Kono at all because the new girl, Tawny, is just great. So I'm loving it, and it's my feel-good show. You know, I put it on, I don't have to think too hard. It's just mindless entertainment. I love McGarrett and what they're doing with him. So if you're a Hawaii Five-0 fan and you're debating the new season, which is on Netflix right now, just go check it out. It's really, really worth it. I also saw Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado, or Dutto, as I want to call it, which starred Guillermo del Toro, and or Benicio, one of those. The movie sucked. It started great, and I liked the first one a lot, but the movie started great. Then it turned into like just a shit show. The ending is like Friday the 13th. That's how ridiculous it is. It's so absurd. I was waiting for Jason Voorhees to show up. I just can't even tell you without spoiling it why it's so ridiculous, but it is. And watch the first one again instead. Made me angry.
Okay.
I don't think anybody really cares, but I'm angry right now. So,
well, I didn't go see it because you told me it was terrible, and I loved the first one. So, and you weren't the only person to say it wasn't that great. So mm-hmm. I didn't need to bother.
Wait, didn't you have the opportunity to actually see it with me and you said no?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that too. I had other things to do that day.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't. All right. Well, Angela, we're going to transition over to our Ant-Man and the Wasp spoiler cast. But before we do that, for the people that don't want to stay for that, join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. Also, you can reach us on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda Sink on Smirk, and me and my other podcast, Remake This Movie Right, which Angela just joined me for to remake. What movie, Angela?
Highlander.
Is that the song? Wow, what the hell was
that? No, I just made it up. Okay. That's how you roll.
Does the Highlander song also happen to be the A-Team song? Is that how it actually goes?
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't know what you're talking about, John.
Bum, bum, bum.
Well, also, I want to remind everyone that we do have a YouTube channel where things like this show pops up, and now we are trying to provide the latest trailers and everything to you guys, too.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. John just started whipping those up, so check that out. That's pretty cool.
That's the youtube.com/The Hollywood Outsider.
Look at that. I don't even have to do this stuff. I can just let John do it. Angela, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And come back soon. You're going to come back for, we're going to do a movie battle royale soon with one of your ideas. I believe you're going to stop by back for that.
Yes, I am. Bring it. I'm going to win.
Keep telling yourself that. All right. Now, if you're ready, it is time for our Ant-Man and the Wasp spoiler cast.
Is Scott Lang? Well, see, that's complicated. Because when I first met Scotty, he was in a bad place. And I'm not talking about Cell Block D. His wife had just filed for divorce. And I was like, damn, homie, she dumped me when you're on lockup? And he was like, yeah, I know. I thought I was going to be with her forever. But now I'm all alone. And I was like, damn, homie, you know what? You got to chin up because you'll find a new partner. But you know what? I'm Luis. And he says, you know what? I'm Scotty. And we're going to be best friends.
Okay, hold on. I like a good story as much as the next person, but what in the hell does this have to do with where Scott Lang is?
I'm getting there.
You put a dime in him, you got to let the whole song play out.
He's like human jukebox.
Okay, I am joined for this reactions/spoiler cast by John Davenport.
Hey, good morning, and hi.
Hi, stuff. And Amanda Sink.
Hello.
This is for Ant-Man, and I'm Aaron Peterson. If you didn't know, did you ever listen to this show? This is Ant-Man and the Wasp. Oh, there's so much buzz around this one, huh? Dad jokes.
Shoot me.
He said shoot me.
All right, well, let's start with the plot, okay? Briefly, in the aftermath of Captain America Civil War, Scott Lang grapples with the consequences of his choices during the Sokovia Accords. As he struggles to rebalance his home life with his responsibilities as Ant-Man, that means deal with his kid while he's being Ant-Man, knowing he can go to jail for 20 years, he's confronted by Hope Van Dyne and Hank Pym, Dr. Hank Pym, with an urgent new mission, save Janet, Hank's wife and Hope's mom, because she's stuck in the quantum realm. You know it's called the quantum realm? Because they mention that at least 164 times. Scott must once again put the suit, and learn to fight alongside the Wasp as they team up and they work together to uncover some secrets from their past and take on a mysterious new foe in Ghost. That's the villain's name, Ghost. It's weird. Anyway, that's the overall plot of Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's a sequel I originally did not want because I thought Ant-Man was just, it's fine. So what were your overall reactions? Manny, you can go first because it's the first Marvel superhero with a female in the title. And apparently that's a big deal. I didn't know it was a big deal, but I keep reading from every website. This is a big deal. So,
well, I think Wasp in general is supposed to be a big deal, but I did not want a second one because while you thought that the first one was meh, okay, I did not like it. I could not get through it both times.
Like at all?
Like I got through it, but I nearly fell asleep both times I watched it. It was so...
Was it a small nap? How many puns can we get in one episode? Let's do this.
Oh my gosh. But it just wasn't very good
to me.
It's
very small of me.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to get rid
just
of you.
Continue.
I would continue if you would stop interrupting me with your dad jokes.
All right.
But I, after seeing this one, I'm really glad that I gave it the chance because I watched it 2 days in a row. I really, really liked it.
The sequel?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
I mean, I was good with the one, but all right. John, what did you think? Overall reactions.
Overall reactions. It's a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. The story kind of takes a couple of different tropes and puts them on their ear and really turns them around. And I really enjoy the fact that they were saying, hey, we could totally do this usual trope, but we're not going to. And it felt fresh. It felt like something different, new. And I think it's one of the best handling of the middling villains for anything in Marvel. Like, you know, usually we have these villains that are problematic. I think this was the best handling of villains that don't mean anything. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't want a sequel. I thought the trailer didn't look good. I love Paul Rudd. I love Evangeline Lilly. Wasn't really excited about it, but I'm like, well, I got to go see it because it's Marvel and I think I'm legally required to watch it. I had an absolute blast. I thought it was one of the most fun movies I've seen this summer. It's really just, it's what summer movies should be. I mean, it's just an absolute, it's a great time.
It really was really, really funny and creative.
Very creative. But we're going to get into that. Right now, let's jump right into this. Did you want a sequel? I already said what I thought, but did you ever want a sequel to the original Ant-Man? Or was this one of those like ancillary characters where he could have had a Hulk run where he just shows up in other people's movies?
After the first movie, which we all know had its production issues, and those production issues were very clear. Like, the only thing that saved the first movie for anything was the fact that you had Paul Rudd being charming, Michael Peña being charming. Everybody in the cast themselves really saved what was a bad movie. So it made it from being just a normal bad movie or being like the worst of Marvel to being just above Thor for me, because Thor and Thor, the Dark World were just kind of okay. And this was kind of in that same area. So, yeah, I was one of those ones that didn't really need a sequel. I enjoyed him in Captain America Civil War. I thought he was a nice addition for laughs and levity and made what a dour situation seem more palatable. But I didn't need the sequel. He could have been just an ancillary character. I'm glad we got a sequel, though.
Can I speak real quick to that Civil War thing? So when Captain America at the end of the Civil War breaks into that boat and they're all in that boat, did he break everybody out but him? Is that the plan? Or because remember he took them all to Black Panther land to, you know, Wakanda forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but apparently Ant-Man didn't go. I can only assume maybe he didn't want to go because he didn't want to leave his daughter. I guess.
Well, from what I can pick up on the story is that essentially Captain America, yes, broke him out, but gave them essentially chances to do whatever they needed to do. So he broke himself out, got himself the suit, sent himself the suit and quote unquote destroyed it. And then he kind of said, okay, let's make a deal. I'm ready to deal so that I can be with my kid.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That makes more sense. Did you need a sequel, Amanda?
Well, no, I didn't need the first one, but... But damn. I'm really glad. Well, no, I love Paul
that
Rudd.
That stings.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It just keeps coming.
I did not need it at all, but I love Paul Rudd. And he's so good on screen, but he's always the same person. But it's still so much fun to watch him. So because of that, I was willing to see the sequel. And, you know, I needed to. I feel like you have an obligation.
It says Marvel. It is legally required.
It is.
It says
at this
Marvel,
point.
You have to.
So, yeah, I never needed it. I never wanted it, but I'm really glad I got it. I just think that...
It's like marriage.
Yeah, there you go. Except for I'm not married, so that doesn't really work out for me.
You'll find out. Maybe.
Same thing, but different.
I think I'm better off.
Wow. Ouch. That went to an ugly place. So what do you think of Ant-Man and Wasp getting equal coverage? Because what I thought was interesting about this movie is that it wasn't a sequel like every other Marvel sequel. It kind of evened up and paired up two characters and made them equal partners. In fact, I would even say maybe the Wasp is a little bit more, gets more coverage than her. So what did you think about the Ant-Man sequel being Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I really liked it. I think that the dynamic between Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lilly worked so well on screen that if you didn't have the two of them together, I don't think the movie would have been as good. And I think that's the difference between the first one and the second one. You have characters that rely on each other on screen, not necessarily the characters' like story or personality, but their dynamic works better on screen when they're together. And that made the movie overall better. So without that, you have the first one. And we're all in agreement that that wasn't a great movie. I think having them together and having equal screen time made it the movie that it was.
Yeah, I have thought a lot about this and feel like Ant-Man was lacking in certain areas because I feel like Ant-Man isn't as exciting on his own.
Right.
I really just don't. Evangeline Lilly, I think, was kind of not wasted, but didn't get a lot to do in the first movie. But you could tell they were building up to this based on the stinger in the first movie. And this one, I feel like Paul Rudd works great when he's bouncing off people. He's just one of those guys where he's fantastic at ad-libbing and riffing and kind of just moving off other people's character decisions and whatnot. And that happens a lot in this movie. And so they're a great team, and it's never too far one way or the other. I mean, they both really complement each other in certain aspects, both in battle, both in relationship. I really dug that. What about you, John? Were you cool with this equal coverage deal? Or were you like, man, I want more Ant-Man all the time. I want Lewis the movie.
I want Wasp the movie, but I'm okay with the equal coverage. And I think I'm okay with it because this is the first time Marvel is just being blatant about it being a team up kind of movie where it's supposed to be only one character, like Captain America, Civil War. The one before Civil War.
Winter Soldier.
Okay. So there you have Captain America teaming up with both Black Widow and Falcon. And really it's about, it has him bouncing off the two of them the majority of the movie, and calling it Captain America is just saying, well, really this is still kind of a team up movie. And some of the other movies from that point on still had other characters bouncing off of each other
Thor Ragnarok is pretty much like Thor and Hulk team up.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's nice to just blatantly say, yeah, this is a team up movie. But I like the fact that both these characters complement each other. And I do think that, like, Paul Rudd's great, and I don't think he was a problem in the first movie at all. If it wasn't for him, that first movie wouldn't have been as good as it was. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I liked about this is that there's a trope they're kind of turning on their ear, or it's becoming more prevalent of a trope where the woman is the more capable badass, and the guy is kind of like, he's good, but he's kind of a boob at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think I like that trope, although I can see how that can get tired real fast.
Well, what I like about how they do it different here is they kind of take the Wonder Woman approach where not that Marvel is mimicking anything that DC is doing. My God, no one freak out. But
calm it down.
A lot of times when you have the strong, I don't want to get into like a whole sexist thing, but I'm going to anyway. A lot of times when you have the strong female heroine, you get that almost like bookish, momish kind of vibe from them. Like, oh, stop boys being boys. Stop it. You know, that kind of where it's kind of off-putting. I don't feel like that's here. I feel like she knows she's better at this. She is more capable. She is just 100% better of a hero, but I don't think she ever really looks down on him or talks down to him or anything else. She just, it's more of like where he failed her that she has problems with, but she's not like that, you know, that school maiden or whatever they call it, you know, like, I don't know, like a nun where I feel like some heroines, when the female heroines, they become like nunnish where they're just looking at you and they're scowling and they're always, you know, judging and everything else. I don't feel like she's like that. I feel like she's a real character, and it feels more Wonder Woman. Like, she's just really damn good at this, and she just wants him to come up to her level because she knows he's capable of it.
Right. Yeah.
They're both very natural in their roles, but she's natural as the superhero, whereas he has to, in some respects, he has to try. He has to figure it out.
In every respect, I think.
Yeah.
but she
and
really
his
doesn't
buttons
have
never
to.
Work, which is kind of mean, really.
Why give him the bad suit?
Yeah, he's constantly, oh, it's a work in progress. Why does my suit never work? I'd be pissed if I was him.
Well, I think he was a little upset.
He should be, because he might be stuck in midget territory forever or giant man territory forever. Neither one of those are bad. However you're born, you know, be happy.
Well, and that scene where he's running around in the sweater, the blue sweater from like the Lost and Found in the school, that was hilarious. So they really played on those small things really well.
Ah, you know you're doing it.
I didn't mean to.
You don't even know you're doing it, and it's happening. Oh, just little jokes, little things.
One of the character aspects that I really liked about her in this movie is that they did a really good job to make her not look glamorous. she just looked like she was somebody kind of living on the run, kind of living suitcase out of her suitcase. She really did sell that off. They didn't dress her up. They didn't make her look like she had the perfect hair, because she didn't. They just made her rely on, as far as her looks are concerned, it's like somebody who's pretty on the street outside. Like, you know, I like the fact that they didn't really push the look of her too far into like a more glamorous look. Like when
like
we do
stereotypical finally women.
Like, well, I mean, like when we do finally see Michelle Pfeiffer show up, all ages of Michelle Pfeiffer is like, I mean, granted, it's Michelle Pfeiffer, so of course she's going to be glamorous and amazing and just fantastic looking.
Yeah,
but
genetics work in her family. That's what I'm hearing.
Right. But still, there's a lot of there's some makeup happening there. There's some hairstyling happening there. She's just they make her seem more like an unreal person because of that. Whereas Evangeline Lilly's character does feel like somebody on the street. And I really appreciated that sort of aspect of her.
I just appreciated her in general because without her, I'm lost. I've got a whole bag of these, and I'm just going to pick them out slowly, by little.
Probably hit the hang up button here.
Let's find that real quick.
I'm sorry. All right. So how was the story for you overall for Ant-Man and the Wasp, John?
Overall, the story had its great beats. I mean, there were so many different things that it could have done, and in a lot of movies probably would have done, and they actually essentially look at you and say, hey, we could do this. Like the moment where Ghost is like, well, we can go after his daughter, and Florence Fishburne's character is like, yeah, we're not going to do that. I'm not going to help you. We're not going to be those kind of people, and we're not stooping to that level. I really appreciated that, mm-hmm. because the problem with having a little poppet of a girl running around as like the character's main focus is that they're going to use her against the character, and I like the idea that they didn't do that. But
I like the idea that we had a character standing firm, and then it actually just didn't happen, because usually when somebody makes a pronouncement like that, oh yeah, I'm not going to do it, you son of a, you moron, I'm going to go do that right now, that's mm-hmm. the first thing I'm doing, and then I'm going to Toys R Us, oh wait, it's closed, I'm going to go get that kid again, you know, it's just like that's what they do. And absolutely right, that really made me happy as a viewer.
Yeah. There's so many other story aspects, but I think that's my favorite part of this story, is that they chose not to go down that road.
In terms of the story, it feels like they took time to make sure that what they did worked, because they did have a lot of different story elements, but it didn't ever feel off focus or like it wasn't set up the way they intended for it to be set up. It moved very smoothly and naturally. And I feel like that was the biggest flaw for me. And the first one was that it felt chaotic, and it felt like the story was disoriented, and the movie and overall in general. But this one had more story dynamics, and they still smoothly went through it. You didn't really even notice until after you're thinking about it how many different things they're putting into the story and integrating, and it just worked. So for me, I was surprised that for it to be such a simple, but also it's not complex in the type of story. It's just complex in the multitude of types of stories that they're putting into
it. It's quantum-plex.
Oh my gosh.
The thing that cracked me up is that if you really look at it, there's no real story. Getting mom out of the quantum realm. That's literally the only thing that they're trying to do. And then all the people that get in their way.
Or it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, it could be. Oh, that would have been great if they had a montage at the end where he's just jumping fences. it was one of those things where I was watching it, and when it was over, I kept thinking, wow, there really wasn't much of a story. But it's still like everything clicked. You know, it's one of those movies. It's a real risk when they do that, when the plot is very simple, even though they have a whole lot of words and there's a lot of exposition for stuff. The actual overall plot is very simple. Get Janet out of the quantum realm. That's it. That's
right.
Their entire goal. And without Scott going back to jail. But the more I thought about it, the happier I was, because the one thing that drives me crazy about comic book movies in general is everything is end of the universe. The universe is coming to an end. We got to blow up a major city. We got to be careful. Otherwise, half of the universe might disappear. You know, there's all this, these things that are possibly going to happen. And if we make any mistakes, humanity is doomed. I didn't want that. And I didn't realize how tired I am of that trope, because it's almost every comic book movie trope anymore. but it didn't happen here. It was really more about a family, you know, coming together than anything. And it was just a nice, refreshing way to do a superhero movie. It's kind of like The Incredibles for people who don't want to watch The Incredibles, like me.
Yeah, and me. But also, to your point, I would argue that while they do have a very simple and, you know, one-angled story for their mission, there are multiple stories in the movie because you have the story of the relationship between he and his daughter.
Well,
and
but see, I'm saying those are character points. I'm saying, like, there's no big, we got to stop Ghost before Ghost destroys the world. We got to stop Sonny Birch before he Walton Goggins his ass off or something. You know, there's none of that. It was just overall, get Janet out of the quantum realm. We found a way. Let's get her out. And then there were obstacles to getting that point. That's what I mean when I say that.
Right.
There's a lot of character.
There's a lot of points. Side stories. Yeah,
there's side quests.
Yeah, really. Right. But the main mission, you know, is really, really simple. And I was going to say something, but I forgot. So
I'm glad I cut that off. You don't need to have points. Yeah. No, just mine. Mine are That's all fine. That are acceptable.
What about John's?
Did he already went through his point.
Did he? Didn't he?
I mean, I guess. You two have been going back and forth for a little bit. I just tuned it all out and forgot where I was.
That sounds accurate. Yeah, that sounds like you.
So, but I'll tell you one thing. The things I liked about this is, and going back to one of the things I said about the villains earlier, is that the choice to say, okay, instead of trying to have one villain that's kind of meh, let's have two villains. This is kind of like what they did with Thor Ragnarok again. Let's have two villains. One villain is kind of charming and fun and is bad for the sake of being bad. And the other villain kind of puts you in a position where you think, okay, well, I get where she's coming from. And so instead of just having a villain that's kind of meh.
Yeah. It's like Killmonger for white girls.
Right. You end up going, all right, well, you know what? I'm on Ava's side. I understand she's feeling pain. She was used her entire life. She went through some crap. All she wants to do is be normal again. Bill Foster, I get what he's doing too, because he's just trying to help Ava. And this whole idea of giving us a villain that, as you know, by the end of the story, she really, it's not that we see her make a U-turn, but we do hear that they've decided to basically make Ava their friend. And that is a really cool aspect. And the whole Walton Goggins, like, you know, bumbling criminal mastermind that kind of charms you. Okay. Yeah. It's a nice heel to our heroes.
Well, you know, everybody that's ever listened to the podcast knows Walton Goggins can literally just show up in anything. He could read a quantum theory book, which I'm sure will happen if they have another movie, and I would watch that because he's just I just love watching him. I think he's great. Go watch Justified. He's so good. He's so good.
Truth Serum. Oh my God, it is Truth Serum.
You know, that's one of those jokes where as I'm watching it, I'm like, man, they're gonna milk the hell out of this, kind of like I've done with dad jokes this episode. But I actually applauded them. I'm like, they're just not giving up on this, man. They're just going to keep going with the truth serum thing. And at every
almost
point,
like I wrote it.
Yeah.
It didn't feel overused.
Like John wrote it because he wouldn't stop. It just kept coming up.
Keep coming up, but it didn't feel like they were, it didn't affect my laughter at it. I was still laughing because the way they used, funny. Yeah. The ways they did integrate it into the story was still really, really funny. And I'm like, oh God, here it is again. But then it's still really funny.
And was it Boga Yaga? What is it? The boogeyman?
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga. Yeah. And I'm like, that's the John Wick thing. And I'm like, I kept waiting for Keanu Reeves to pop up.
Oh,
like,
man, that would have been a good movie.
So that was pretty funny.
You all put the dime in the jukebox. You got to let the song play out.
Oh, that was so funny.
Wow, Dr. Pym. Like, who would have thought that once again, in your hour of need, that you would turn to us, you know?
That mean?
Help yourself.
Hey, what's up with the fancy pastry? We got to keep the food budget down.
Well, what are we supposed to have for breakfast?
The oatmeal packets.
Oatmeal packets?
It's insult.
Why is it an insult?
Because it tastes like sand.
You know why? It's because it's organic.
No,
that's
it's
why.
Not organic. It's sand.
It's the most important meal of the day.
You know what? You can get creative with it.
Break teeth.
I'll put a little brown sugar on it. You put some cinnamon. Put a little honey.
Guys, come on, man. We got bigger fish to fry.
Is that my desk?
Yeah.
What?
Why do I have such a small desk?
Well, because you weren't there when we were choosing desks.
You snooze, you lose.
Well, I was under house arrest.
Yeah.
You know what? This isn't even a desk. This is garbage. You found this outside amongst garbage.
I got it at a rummage sale.
So you save money on my desk?
Guys!
Hope, Please, we need to focus, all right? We got to find that lab already. Jeez.
You know what? Before we get to, because we're already kind of into our favorite moments, let's hold off that for a second. Is there anything that didn't work for you in Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Not real. This is the hardest question that I've had to think about, because when I rewatched the movie.
Like ever? Or no, just for
no,
this episode?
Just for this episode. Because okay. I was thinking about this question when I watched it the second time. And I'm having, because I didn't give it a perfect score, but I'm having a hard time figuring out what it is that's keeping me from giving it a perfect score. And I don't know what it is. I don't feel like anything is missing. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like anything is flawed, but it's still not a perfect movie for me. So I don't know if it's just like, because it's at a time where there's so much other superhero stuff that I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I've seen some of this stuff before. Mm-hmm. So I think if I would have seen this movie before, you know, 10 other superhero movies every year, then I probably would have given it a perfect score. But I don't know what it is in here. There's just something that's just holding it back for me. So I'm hoping you guys maybe fill in a blank for me.
Let me try to quantify that for you, because I agree. There's
quantify it.
I said quantify.
Kick him off the podcast.
let's try to quantify it, because I agree that, like, looking at the movie as a whole, it's hard to find something that really dig in for. The characters are great. The acting is great. The special effects are great. The story is good. And so, yeah, I mean, everything has a passing grade, but does that passing grade leave you feeling like my favorite thing to do on Saturday is just go get my Philly cheesesteak, my pizza steak from my Philly cheesesteak stand that I like to go to. And then after that, I have an ice cream sandwich. Now that is a $10 experience to me. Though this
that just
is,
went like, I was I like,
love,
what just
I
happened?
I love that you're using a food analogy.
Did we turn into the Food Network? What just happened?
I respect it.
That's a $10 experience to me. Like, I get excited. I'm happy. For about 10 minutes of my life, I feel like something happened to me that really changes my outlook on the world. It's all sunny and puppy dogs and shiny. This movie, though, put a smile on my face and enjoyed it, doesn't leave me with that same sort of feeling, so I can't give it a perfect score.
That feels like the longest possible way to get to your point.
I really
you
appreciate
what
you're
telling.
You put
the dime in the machine.
Well.
I'm yeah, let the song play out.
Touche. I got a feeling we're going to be hearing that for a long time from John. I could name a couple things. One, as much as I like Michael, and I've loved Michael Douglas most of his career, I just think he's a cool actor and he's done a lot of cool stuff. The one thing he's not is funny. There's a couple moments in the movie where he's supposed to be kind of doing a quip, you know, tossing a quip out there, and it doesn't land.
I still laughed.
I laughed because it's like watching your grandpa try to be funny. You
I know, but
it's
see, like, that still worked for me because it was fun. It was like dorky funny.
They all work for me. It just... to me, I read it as curmudgeon-y old guy.
I mean, okay, I guess in that respect, it probably works because it doesn't come across that way. But there's a couple times where he threw something out and I'm just like, oh, no. But overall, maybe it was the lack of having a villain with the real end game or something, you know, some real goal. I feel like Ghost wasn't really fleshed out very well. I mean, I got her arc, but it felt very Killmonger-esque. You know, in terms of, hey, look, it's relatable and it's not really a villain. It's more like an opponent and da 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 da. And Sonny Birch wasn't really, I mean, as cool as Walton Goggins is, it wasn't a big threat to anybody. I mean, what's the black market guy going to do to Ant-Man and the Wasp besides
FBI.
Get his ass kicked? Yeah.
He's got his FBI connections. Yeah. I guess I would have.
Those are probably the only two, really the only, and they're minor complaints. I really don't have much else to complain about. I think it's really, overall, it's a very well. Ironed out
for film. Me. Okay, so one thing that I just thought of while you were talking was,
what, you couldn't just listen to him talk?
Well, I was, but then something he said sparked
rude,
something in my head.
I mean, it's a podcast. We're supposed to hear each other.
I did hear you, and I did listen.
I listened.
I feel
like you heard
so well
listen.
That you inspired me.
Oh my god, what's happening
now? I'm on board. All right,
but what could have been fleshed out is the relationship between Sonny and the FBI agent that he had. He, seriously, you're a black market guy and you have some run of the mill, like off the street FBI agent who barely does his job and his boss barely listens to him. Can I interrupt
real quick?
Yeah. This is Deus Ex Machina.
I want to interrupt. Run of the mill. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, get him off. I'm going to do a petition.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Oh, my gosh. So, but yeah, that was...
You wish you would have seen more of the relationship.
Well, no, I don't even know that I needed to see more of the relationship, but just why did you go for the most, like, the lowest level?
The blandest, and you right. call, like, the
like,
guy.
That FBI agent was really, like, A, dumb. You're just going to hang out. You're just going to grab this lab and just walk it over to the trunk of your car, and nobody's going to see you? I mean, how does that happen?
That was hysterical.
But it was funny, but this guy just seems really
stupid.
No,
it was funny in a bad movie moment. Right. I'm just watching going, that was literally the dumbest move in the movie, where I'm just, who does that?
He didn't even try to hide it. He, like, looked over his shoulder like, ooh, I hope nobody's watching
me. These other 40 agents aren't going to see me do this.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you start acting like you're doing something wrong, everyone's going to pay attention to you.
John, he's walking over there and putting a giant building in his trunk.
It's not that big of a building. It's a box underneath his arm.
Looked like a pretty
substantial... He had to use two hands to carry it.
I'm just saying. It was a little interesting. That's all.
I don't know. To me, that building was big enough to just fit under cradle underneath my arm. That's all.
Because you have really long arms.
Why are you cuddling the building? That's what I want to know. Why?
It is a nice building. It needs to be cuddled.
Hiya, champ. How was school today?
Ha, ha, ha. All right, get your jokes out now. Can you fix the suit?
So cranky.
You want a juice box and some string cheese?
Do you really have that?
All right, favorite moments. We already talked about some of them, but what else you got? What else you got? What really made you smile and made it a cheesesteak and margarita mix or whatever?
Margarita mix? Where did
he
that
said ice
from?
Cream.
Ice. Well, you know what?
Margarita ice cream.
Margarita ice cream. It's got to be a flavor.
What?
Just get to your point. What did you like? Right. Favorite moments. Stop being judging.
My favorite? You know what? My favorite moments were watching Paul Rudd do the tunnel game with his daughter.
Yep.
That was great. That was great. I felt like such a horrible father that I've never done that. I'm like, you can build that?
Seriously, that was the most creative. And I, as soon as I saw it, because when it starts and he had the map, and I saw the map, I was like, oh, he's going to be doing something with his daughter. But I didn't expect it to be that elaborate. And it was really, really cute.
Mm-hmm. No, it was adorable. That they're essentially reliving the first movie in that little play game was pretty awesome.
The fuzz.
And then beyond that, the school scene when he gets stuck as a midget.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, it cracks me up.
That was so funny. His long ass little sleeves.
And he gets in the car and he's like, she's like, oh, you're cranky. And he's like, do you want a juice box and a string cheese? Do you have that? I related to that so hard.
Amanda, did you have any other favorite moments? Like to really stood out?
Well, we talked about a lot of them, but seeing the when you open the bathroom door and the I don't know what kind of – is it just a giant ant or what kind
it's
of bug
just
is
an ant. It's been giant-sized.
Okay. I don't look at bugs, so I'm not sure how many legs they're supposed to have.
He's a drummer. He's going to go on tour with Rush.
Right. But when he's in the bathtub pretending to be Paul Rudd and she opens the door and she just looks at it, it has like a little soap bubble on the top of its head. I cracked up laughing at that and I don't know why, but it was really funny to me.
And the fact that she doesn't freak out over giant ants in the bathtub was kind of cool. I'm like, that's a cool kid. I like her.
Yeah.
But the dynamic with him and his daughter was she really stood out to me because she was really funny. And Paul Rudd, his humor worked really well with that little girl's humor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like the dynamic between the ex-wife and then Paxton, the new husband.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
See, that felt a little.
It was fake, but I don't care. Nah. It was fun because in the first movie, it was such a. Yeah, why do you keep screwing everything up with this kid? You're a loser. And
yeah.
By the end of the movie, they kind of had a relationship, and now they're all best buddies. We can't wait for you to get out. I love that. That was
the
great.
The group hug thing that kept happening, that's the one thing that I didn't laugh again at in the second viewing. Because I was like, okay, all right, I get it. Like, I got it the first time in the first movie. We didn't.
So you hate estranged families. Like, you don't like split families is what I'm hearing?
No, I'm do what you got to do. But it just felt too forced.
Oh, it was totally forced, but I liked it.
So I didn't laugh as much.
Well, for me, each time it happened in the movie, I thought it was just adorable. Like the whole Paxton jumping in on the hug. I'm in on this. And it was just like, to me, that was saying, okay, we realized in the first movie that this was a ridiculous trope that we pulled, mm-hmm. and we are basically apologizing for it with this.
All right.
The things that I love most throughout the movie, Evangeline Lilly, by the way, I would watch The Wasp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Before I would watch another Ant-Man, honestly. I thought she was great, and she kicked ass.
That goes unsaid for me.
Yeah, obviously. But the other thing is that throughout the movie, it is the absolute abundance of creativity. And there were moments of it in the first movie, especially that Thomas the Tank Engine ending and all that. Like, it was really clever. But the way that they play with size and going big, going small, using it to complement the action, you know, especially while Wasp is doing it. You know, she's just changing sizes as she goes and using that to kind of win. And they do that with vehicles, and they do that with buildings, and they do that with his giantness at the end. And they use all of these things, and there's constantly something happening. It is like the most vivacious, bubbly, creative outpouring of imagination I have seen in a movie in a long time, where I was just constantly looking around at all sections of the screen and trying to see if I'm missing something. And that was fantastic to me. I couldn't even tell you like one special effect that stood out to me, but they were all just almost magical. I felt like one of those kids walking into Willy Wonka. So I'm like, oh, oh, oh. That was just so fun. It was fun.
Yeah, no, totally.
Any chance for them to flex those creativity muscles on this thing was something that I really just ate up with a spoon. I really enjoyed the idea that how they executed it, because it really did feel fresher than any other comic book movie we've had in a while. And I like how they handled the villain. The villain wasn't the same thing as the hero. It was something completely different that they had to fight against, as opposed to two characters that are fighting against each other, shrinking and growing and doing all these things. It's they're fighting this character that goes in and out of phase and a crime boss. Okay. I like that, though. I like how they had to figure out how to work with each other or work against each other because of the non-complementary abilities. And I think that was really important and part of what made this feel fresh. Like, you get the Hulk fights against things that get bigger and get angry, and Thor fights against gods. This is something completely different, and I like that idea.
How about the Stinger? Like, let's talk about the Stinger for a minute, because you got this movie that was zippy and fun and quippy and fun and light, and it was just a blast. And then they go through the early credits. Then you have the Stinger, like the big Stinger, where they're testing him. They mentioned time travel because they have to, because they know time travel is probably going to be part of Infinity War 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's stuck in the quantum realm again, and they are vaporized, assuming by Thanos. What did you think of the Stinger, Amanda? Did that shock you? Do you like that, or were you pissed?
I was really shocked. And I don't know why I didn't expect this to be the Stinger, but as soon as it happened, because I just thought it was going to be more funny and more quippy and basically just an extension. Yeah, an extension of the movie. And when it related back, I kind of forgot about Avengers because I was so enraptured with this movie. And then when it happened and I saw the dust, I was like, oh, shit. Thanos, oh no, they're all gone. And then I'm thinking about what's going to happen to Ant-Man, and is he just going to be stuck here? Or
that
what's
poor
family.
Happen? They just got back together. Now they're right? Vaporized.
Well, technically, they're still together in that dustpan.
Ooh. Yeah, there you go. But I'm wondering if somehow he's going to...
Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if he's somehow going to be able to use...
I hope nobody sweeps that up. That'd be...
Dear God.
Sorry, go ahead.
The wind will take it away, no doubt. They're on the top of a building. But I'm wondering if he's going to be able to use his ants. Like, he has the one that's hanging out doing some drumming for him and stuff. If he's somehow going to be able to have that ant come out and help him. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he'll get out somehow. Hopefully, hope is still around. It's my last one, I promise.
No, hope
turned to dust, too.
She turned to dust.
She wasn't there. I thought it was just Hank and Janet.
No, it was all three of them.
Oh, then all that dust is going to mesh together. That's not good.
Yeah.
You got hot dust and old guy dust and old but still hot dust. It's just weird.
a lot of levels of dust.
I didn't really. She was really. Are we sure yeah. she's there? Well, you saw it no, twice.
She, I saw it twice.
Yeah, dead serious. She was there.
The Man. Only one who didn't get disintegrated in that tower. Well, I mean, Lewis is still around.
Well, that's going to work out well.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah, we don't know that.
Well, but yeah, well, true. But I mean, we didn't see anything happen to him.
I really. Okay, now I have a dream in my head.
For a movie?
Yeah. For mm-hmm. Infinity War 2, it opens. Because you always have to have a recap. I want Lewis to recap the events.
Yes, with his truth serum.
Oh, my God.
No, just the way he does it. And then there was a guy back in prison.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
With his, the way he did it with the truth serum.
Just do it.
That was so funny.
I would watch that.
That honestly, that. John, I'm not kidding you. When I watched it both times and I saw how he was talking, I was like, this is Johnny Davenport.
What I would recommend is that Michael Pena. Thank you. He lost his entire accent. I would recommend that he find it for the next movie. Because it's like the first movie, he had a very pronounced Spanish accent. And in this one, it's almost like, only when I do that little truth serum bit do I have that anymore. I thought that was kind of odd choice.
Maybe John can
lend. That's an interesting character trope because, well, not character trope, but character piece because it shows that he is trying to be more of a quote unquote respectable person by not speaking like a Chicano. Mm-hmm. And then when the truth serum hits him, he can't help but be who he really is. But he's trying to get jobs, trying to get people to hire ex-cons, which they name their business ex-con.
I love that.
Hire ex-cons to do their security. Ex-cons doing security. Are you kidding me? And so he's got to do something to whiten it up a bit. So no more Chicano accent.
Hey, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense, but I missed it. Like throughout the movie, I'm like, where'd it go? Oh, and then I'm thinking, well, the business thing. But he does it when he's alone with Paul Rudd, but I guess he could be just trying to, you know, you got to do it consistently. Otherwise, it can't work for you.
It's kind of funny. Seriously just realized that they called their business ex-cons because they're ex-cons.
You saw it twice and you just now realized it?
I missed it.
Ay, ay, ay.
You know, they call him Ant-Man because he can be the size
of
an ant.
Thank you so much, John. I caught that one.
They call her Wasp because she actually has a stinger in her butt.
You know, one of the things that I saw online that I broke my brain was the fact that the front of his outfit looks like the pattern for an ant and the front of her outfit looks like the pattern for a wasp.
That blew your mind?
it blew my mind because in the first movie they didn't do that. The first movie it wasn't so
literal.
Yeah, it wasn't so literal. And then like as I'm looking at the artwork and stuff, I'm like, what? There's something here I'm not seeing. And then somebody posted up how they outlined the fact that the patterns of the yellow and red spots on each of their costumes look like an ant and a wasp.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, finally, do you want more standalone movies or just want to see these characters pull a Hulk and just pop up in other people's movies? Do you want more of – what do you want, John?
I want more Ant-Man and the Wasp. I want more of these two in particular running around doing stuff. I want to see more Evangeline Lilly schooling Paul Rudd on how to do things. I want to see more Paul Rudd making every serious situation be fun and exciting and hysterical and awkward and everything else he does. I want to see these two do another movie.
Yeah, I'm with John. He said it all.
Yeah, as long as they're teamed up. I don't want an Ant-Man solo movie, but I really want an Ant-Man and the Wasp movie. Or a Wasp solo movie.
I was
going to
say, or a Wasp solo. But I do want Michael Pena. Am I saying his name right?
Pena, yeah.
Pena. Okay, it sounds so much cooler when you say it. I want him, whatever the movie is, I want him integrated into it because he's really funny.
I want him to do all recaps for Marvel from now on.
That would be hilarious.
Just to have his voice come out of Thanos would make my day.
Well, he did. He was trying to hint at being a superhero. Like, oh, I wish I could have a suit, even with no superpowers. Or he's like, with limited superpowers, or a suit with no superpowers.
I would
just
watch
a suit.
The hell out of Lewis Man would watch it.
You know, I really can't wait to see like a Marvel Sirens happening with the Wasp.
Oh, that would be cool. Widow.
Yeah,
that would be cool. That would be cool.
Captain Marvel.
Well, we don't have that yet, but that's coming soon. That's coming soon. All right.
Just months away now.
What's that?
It's just months away.
Yeah, it's March, right? It's coming in March.
Yeah, March.
Oh, I'm excited. It's got to come before Infinity War. It's not going to make a whole lot of sense. All right, so if $10 is the full price of admission, final score, what do you give Ant-Man and the Wasp? Amanda.
$8.50.
Oh, I'm giving it 750. Yeah, I give the first movie a 6, so it definitely jumped up quite a bit. And I was 6 was being very generous in that first one.
I gave it a 7 the first time I watched it. But
you liked it more the second time.
I liked it more. The reason I liked it more, like I gave it a higher score after I saw it the second time, is because it holds up being able to rewatch it. And to watch it the next day and those jokes still work for me and the story still works for me and I just seen it. And it was late at night and I'm really tired. And it still was really good to me. I was like, this is
better than
impressive.
Yeah. Very cool. How about you, John? What do you get? Final score?
Final score, $8.
All right. Well, I guess we're all in the same ballpark. Average, 8. So there you go. It's a winner. It's a winner. Go check it out. Definitely check it
winner,
out.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Nobody says that.
Yes, they do.
I say it all the time.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You never say that.
How do you know?
I say it all the time.
You never say it.
It's part of my vernacular.
Making this up, such a tiny lie. All right, so we're going to head out, and please remember that the next time you go to see Ant-Man and the Wasp in a theater, which I'm sure is probably going to be multiple times, buy popcorn.
I did.
Just one kernel, though. That's all you need if you're that small.